Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Ted Santos, and it is Sunday, and it is time for Straight Talk. And before we start talking straight, I'm going to bring it in with a little beat. Some people call it the caveman beat, but we're going to bring it on. Let's get into it. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Ted Santos, and I am your host of Straight Talk. We are the talk show that is made for men, by men. The thing is, Not even ladies want to miss our show. We are the show that looks at life, love, relationships, social challenges, and we always do it from a man's perspective. We do it from a masculine perspective. We do it from that side of life that has been missing. For decades, men have been told by women what it means to be a real man, what men should expect from women and what men should do. We've had women do role reversals and tell men what their roles are. Very interesting. You even hear women want traditional men. They want the man from the 1950s, the old-fashioned, masculine, rugged man. But yet they don't want to play the role that has traditionally stood by that rugged guy, traditional guy. They've made the rules, and many men have gone along. And so we often take on topics that are, some may be considered distasteful, provocative, insulting. Some of these topics are just politically incorrect, and no one wants to touch them, even though the dead elephant in the room, and no one really wants to talk about it. And other times, well, we take on topics that are just everyday, whether it's celebrity-based, things that everyone's talking about, well, we just look at it from a very different perspective. Because we have a sort of mainstream and a politically correct way of looking and discussing things. And there are so many perspectives that are just left on the table. So tonight, we're going to look at something that has been happening for about 48 years, and it's called the Battle of the Sexes. And when you have a battle, well, someone has to win. And if someone wins, someone probably lost. So we're going to talk about that tonight. We're going to look at, and you know I always like to have more than one topic for a show, has the Battle of the Sexes produced a winner or a loser? And some of my thoughts went like this. In 1973, there was a tennis match that shaped U.S. culture. It was a match against 55-year-old Bobby Riggs and 29-year-old Billie Jean King, who was ranked number one for female tennis players. This was the beginning of the Battle of the Sexes. In all battles, there are winners and losers. And since this battle has been happening for 48 years, the winner should be apparent. Have men won, or is it the ladies? Has society even benefited from this? Before the pandemic, women made up 51% of the workforce. It would seem Billie's win over Bobby set a pace for women to have the upper hand. Women have access to higher paying jobs while demanding equal pay with men. However, when you examine the dynamics of this decades-long battle, the U.S. may have started a fight where no one wins. Not the women, not the men, not the children. Or maybe someone is winning. So we're going to look at this. As I said, 1973 was a tennis match between the number one ranked female tennis player was Billie Jean King. And she played a retired tennis professional, Bobby Riggs, and the woman won. They played four matches, and she won all four matches. And that sort of opened the door for women being paid a lot more than what they were being paid. Somehow, a 29-year-old who was a professional playing a 55-year-old was considered a level playing field. And, very interesting. I just think it's very interesting how we look at equality between men and women. And perhaps that match was a perfect example on how women are assessing their value and their equality with men. So a woman won that match in 1973. And you guys know I love doing screen shares, so I have to do some screen shares today for sure. And we're going to look at several things. We're going to look at it from several different perspectives, as always. So women have claimed that they are equal to men. In fact, that whole battle of the sexes opened up a sort of a new slogan for women. And that slogan went like, a woman can do anything a man can do, but better. So the fact that 29-year-old Billie Jean King beat 55-year-old Bobby Riggs left women with this invincible, you know, I am woman, hear me roar. The Helen Reddy made a song that said, that was by that title, I am woman, hear me roar. I can roar. Roaring like a woman. I'm tough, independent, we don't need men, and we can do it all, and we can do it better than men, is what men were told. And men have listened to that for four decades now. And I'm going to show a video that illustrates the reality of what that equality is. Before I get into some of the other stats and statistics. So we have the ladies who are screaming they're equal. They want to be paid like men. You guys know I already did a show about the WNBA that has said the women basketball players are claiming they should be paid the same as men. Except I want to look at the best tennis players, the best female tennis players, how do they match up when you put them on a court with women? So if when you have a 29-year-old playing a woman playing a 55-year-old man who is retired, and I would wonder if you're 55 and retired, are you training to compete as a professional? But that could sound like I'm making an excuse. So I don't want to make an excuse for Bobby Riggs. Let's look at what happens, and this is going to be, you're going to watch current day. This video went up March 2021, and you're going to watch what is considered the best female tennis player of all time, like the GOAT, the greatest of all time of female players. And if you haven't seen King Richard, the story of the Williams sister, Serena Williams and her sister. Their father did an extraordinary job training them and bringing them into places where they would get the absolute best training. And he managed their career so that they would be long-standing champions. Just great movie. And the kind of stand that he took for his daughter. And just for the record, Richard Williams did this for his daughters. And I really would like to see a case where a mother has done this, had that kind of commitment and dedication to her children and made them extraordinary. So we have a father who did it for his daughters in tennis. We have a father who did it for his son in golf. That's Tiger Woods. We have a father who did it with his son, with all of his children, called the Jackson family. And when he saw something in his son, Michael, he worked with him even more. The same pattern happened with Beyonce. So, you know, this all falls into this battle. So, you know, women have taken on the battle of put the boys and men aside, and we're going to focus on the girls and the women. And the fathers say, I'm going to make my children extraordinary regardless. So I'm not sure if men have been as actively participating, but should men decide to strike back in the battle of the sexes, let's look at this video and see what it might look like. So here we have, I guess they call a doubles match, where a man and woman is on the same team playing against a man and woman on the other team. And we're just looking at primarily what happens when a man serves, right? And just think, when a woman serves, she hits that ball is doing about 100 miles an hour. When a man hits it, it's doing about 130 miles an hour. That's about 30% increase. And think about it, 30% is a huge, that's a huge disparity. Just think, if you bench 100 pounds and you add 30%, that's 30 pounds. Well, if you bench, if your max is 200 and you add 30%, that's 60 pounds. That's another world. So let's see what happens when there's a 30% increase in performance. And by the way, they find that men outperform women, even in the business world, 15 to 30%. So we're going to look at it where it's pretty obvious.
Hitting the ball away to just cross willy-nilly.
I mean, this is just a serve. Like, how often do you see a woman, women playing against one another and not being able to return a serve? I mean, that's rare. But like, look at this pattern.
This end is a wall. There's that one down there. It shouldn't be that way. Come on, John.
Now, and listen to the announcers. Come on, John. Like, he should take it easy on her. This is a professional match. They're like, hey, man, come on. Why are you playing so hard? And so at PJ, what's going on, country boy? What's going on, PJ? I see your comment, PJ, that women are winning in the courts. And just listen to this announcer. Perhaps this is part of the problem, is that men, women are saying they can beat us in anything, and they come at us like with this vengeance and tell us that our fathers and grandfathers were horrible people and they're out to get us back for what our fathers and grandfathers did, while they have no evidence of this, but this is their mindset. And men are taught to just sort of take it on the chin. Just watch this.
There's that one down there. It shouldn't be that way. No. Come on, John.
Come on, John.
No, I knew that was coming. It's a pop, though. It's a double. It's going to be telling. Oh, no. Oh, no. The early point, Jeannie has a chance at here. Will it be a double fault? No. It's an eight.
Problem for this guy, Red Funds guy.
Now, look, that woman is considered the greatest tennis player of all time. Listen to her. I mean, these women are professionals. They are trained to serve and return that serve. What's going on, L.E.K.? We're wondering if who's winning the battle of the sexes.
Well, we can see there, Darren talked about right at the top of the match where Serena's going to stand for that serve. And she didn't get a hold of that one, but you can see, be aggressive. She's not standing back at all. And Jersey will use...
Oh, my God. Could be near a 20.
49.
viaggio per il rumore appena sentito. Va a servire ancora una volta uscita.
Si entra.
Hey PJ, now see, this is interesting where men are not allowing. This is an example of what happens when men have no mercy and treat women as an equal on the court here. And in 1973, they thought tennis was a great game where it would be somewhat of a level playing field between men and women. But here, these men are introducing us to reality.
That's the one I'm waiting for. Well, she has to get. This is also.
See, the women are used to returning a ball that's going 100 miles an hour. These balls are going about 130 miles an hour. That velocity increase is just enormous. Even if they may play against men when they practice, when they train, but reality, I mean, and these guys are, it seems they're not taking it easy. Hey, PJ, I'm guessing they're screaming because that ball coming at them like that would be kind of stressful. They've got to put in an effort that they normally don't have to put in.
It's not a problem for Ignis Guru Advanced Guy.
E poi l'ace, giusto a evitare 30 pari, ci mette una patch. Una buona prima per Steffi.
I didn't go in her body at all, at least, but I was going wide, I was going T, and every serve I hit seemed to find their spot, so. I like Jeannie a lot, but I had to go after.
So I show that, you know, the whole Billie Jean King and Bobby Riggs, the woman beat the man, like, you know, a 55-year-old man against a 29-year-old woman, and the women of today are much better players than they were in 1973, and. And I showed that video just to see what reality is. What I find amazing is that women assess their equality with men by having a 29-year-old professional tennis player play a 55-year-old retired man. So, and this is kind of, so it is the differences, the disparity in age at 55, not training to compete. And there was another video I watched, and Bobby Riggs said, you know, they asked, would you want a rematch? He said, hey, she beat me fair and square. If there is a rematch, what I'd like, I would actually train for this more seriously. I'd prepare to compete against her. so he didn't take it that seriously. He was under the impression he was just going to come in and destroy her, and he didn't. So when we look at this whole notion of the battle of the sexes, oftentimes women are assessing their competency, their productivity, and their ability to outperform men. They're not always using it as a head-to-head. So, you know, we look at companies where there are all women compared in the same exact industry, all men, and the women underperform men by a minimum of 15%. Yet women are claiming they should be paid equally because they're performing the same. And I guess in the beginning, using that whole Billie Jean King, people were caught up in, well, a woman beat a man, so women must be better than we think. And then women kept driving. You want to talk about PR, the movies, television, music, were all saying to men, hey, men, we're here, and we can do whatever you can do, and we can do it better. So men were kind of like the deer in the headlights and almost didn't respond. But now that the jury is back, we're seeing actual statistical facts. Productivity, if you look at productivity in the workforce, in just in the United States from 1948 until 1968, you have overwhelming majority men in the workforce, and productivity capacity was 108%, meaning men were functioning 108%, 8% over like 100 at maximum capacity. Now, granted, technology has increased productivity for people in the workforce, but when you just isolate it and look at the human performance, 1948 to 1968, 108%. From 1969 until 2015, we're down to 69. So we're not even at maximum capacity. And I'm asserting the reason is because we have less productive people in the workforce. We have women in the workforce who are not performing the same as they do as men. Interesting, right? And there's another thing. A lot of women are the ones who do want to get married. They're coming to marriage. Well, we didn't even get to marriage yet, but... So are women winning? So women they were able from the 1970s, this Billie Jean King, they were able to get jobs that traditionally went to men. They've been demanding more money, and they don't. So this disproportion comparison they do, right? So look at 29-year-old professional tennis player against a 55-year-old retired male. And so then when women go into the workforce, they take 60% more sick leave than men. They want time off for their children when they're sick. They want time off to pick up their children from school. They want time off, time off, time off. And then they want maternity leave. They want time off to be pregnant. And they want all this with no consideration for how that impacts the organization and its profit margins. The notion is, well, the company's making money, but when you have millions of women across the nation wanting more time off, what is the impact? And they're saying that they're outperforming men. They're saying they're doing better than men, even though they're working less and they want more time off. So I want to look at more of this, but I'm going to take some calls. You guys know I always take calls. I'll drop a link for YouTube. I'm going to take two callers here. One is area code 870 and 231. 870, you're live and on the air with Straight Talk. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Good evening to you. This is Country Boy. How's it going, man?
What's going on, man? Thanks for calling in. How are you?
Oh, I'm good. I enjoy this topic here because we need to have this because we have to look at this thing from all angles here. It appears that people thinking these women are winning, but that's not the case.
Well, that's why we're going to look at it, right? So it may seem obvious, right? Yeah, keep going.
But when you look at the rate at which this AI has evolved, man, to the point to where they basically going to replace the typical workers in the workplace, technically the men who create those machines are winning. You got to look at it like that. That's really why I told them in the chat, man. We're basically going to be dropping a notch on the food chain pretty soon, Ted. That's scary. You just got to look at the articles, man, about the AI now, man. They can not only have sex, Ted, but these machines can now reproduce and have offspring.
Yeah,
That's some scary stuff, man. And I ain't trying to, I'm not trying to veer away from the topic, but those men are winning.
Okay.
Anybody get there to argue with me, please, let's have an intelligent argument because something's going on out here.
I'm definitely going to deal with AI because that is part of the equation for today and in the much nearer future than people realize.
Man, it's scary and it's inedible now, T. You can't say it's not up on us. It's here.
All right. Good enough. 2-3-1, what are your thoughts on this? Who's winning in the battle of the sexes?
Am I unmuted?
Yes, you are. Yes, sir.
What's up, Joe?
Hello, Kendricks. Hello, Ted. How are you guys doing?
All right. How you
feeling? Wonderful.
Hey, thanks. The battle of the sexes, we all know it's... It's a real dilemma. Yes, of course, the promotion that was that ensued as a result of Billie Jean King and Bobby Riggs, it turned out to be more than just a publicity stunt. It was something which women grabbed onto, and of course, which was funded by men, so that there would be a division between the sexes, which then became a little bit more deeper than it used to be.
Right,
so
right.
Who's winning the battle of the sexes? Well, of course, the women are because they win in court. The statistics that you bring up show that women are less productive. They create more of the violence domestically. And yet, they work less and they demand more. So apparently, they're winning because more men are suffering as a result and at the hands of women who are extremely selfish and hostile. So that's my answer.
All right, good enough. Hey, and I forgot to add something. Bobby Riggs played, before he played Billie Jean King, he played an Australian tennis champ, Margaret Court, and he beat her, and you never hear anything about it.
Mm. Well, so I forgot all about it.
It's almost like they had to find someone who could beat him. And as you just pointed out, they used that as a springboard to do a lot of other things. It was the whole thing of, see, we're better. We have proof now.
As a matter of fact, there's a woman on, I listened to a conservative talk radio, well, I used to, until Trump lost the election through default. In my opinion, it was stolen from him. But nevertheless, there's this radio station in which it has the owner of the station is a host, and he has a female co-host. So they had on another co-host at one particular time, a guest, which is also a co-host for that particular network. So they're talking back and forth. I think they were talking about the upcoming mayoral race in New York City. So the guy's name is Katsimatidis, whatever.
Oh, yes, I'm familiar with him. I think I've actually met him, but keep going.
Yeah, so he says he's talking about behind every man there's a great woman, but she, okay, now he's falling into that old cliche, but she says behind every man is a greater woman. And I listen to this, and I'm saying, you got to be kidding me. You're actually just saying this on the air during a political type of a discussion. And she was joking around, but at the same time, she was serious. So I'm saying that to say this. The battle of the sexes is still here, and women are still deluded into believing that they can do anything a man can do and do it better. However, one of the chief proponents of that used to be Roseanne Barr. She used to have as part of her act, well, whatever a man can do, a woman can do better. So now she's revised that little riff, and she says now, whatever a man can do, I can find another man to do it better. So she's changed her attitude that a woman can do it better than a man. So I like that change anyway.
Interesting. Let me bring in another caller here. Area code 405. You're live and on the air with Space Talk. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hey, what's going on, Ted? It's Chris. How you doing?
What's going on, man? What's up, Chris?
Yeah, man, not a lot. It's you know what? It's a really tough call, but I have to say that they're winning. And I say that because of this. The battlefield on which that was set up for them to play. We're all just players in the game, right? So the battlefield and the rules by which the game is being played is all set up for men. So men built this game. Remember, they don't build anything. So men built the game that was rigged against them. So it's kind of like one of those things where, you know, if you're going to set a trap for the enemy, it's easy if you used to be one of them. You know what I mean? And so men have set the trap for themselves, and it's kind of hard for you to win against it unless you just don't play the game. You don't participate in the game. So unless you walk away, unless you just don't engage them, you're going to lose. Because when you engage them, remember, you're not playing by their rules. You're playing by your own rules. You're playing by rules that you would set if you were to create the game.
Interesting.
Even now, look at the have you seen this thing in Atlanta where they're just going to give black women free money just for existing? Have you seen this?
What does that mean?
Oh, that one missed me, Chris. I ain't know that.
Oh, wow.
It's all over the news. Yeah, they're going to get a free check just for existing.
Oh, God. Oh, fuck.
Yeah, but here's the funny thing. When white people talk about that, they'll say black people because they're too scared to say black women. So they'll blame black men for that too.
So,
just want that to be said. Want that to be thrown out there. But once again, I hate to say it, Joe. But all this bullshit is because white men refuse to stand up to women. White men set the rules in society. The rest of us just follow them.
Well, not only that, Chris. Remember last week I said that Aaron Russo was talked to by one of the Rockefeller clan, and that particular is a cousin. His last name is Rockefeller. This is years ago before Aaron Russo died. And he told him, he said that they, the Rockefellers, funded the feminist movement in order to create the division and to have more taxpayers on the rolls, you know, more women in the workforce. It divides the nation from within. And it also increases the tax rolls, or at least puts burden on the women to pay taxes. So, yeah. So white guys are responsible. Yeah.
But men pay more taxes than women do. Men pay way more and get far less out of it. Look at all these single mothers. The single mothers, these bitches who have these jobs where they make $20,000 or less, and they're getting $6,000 and $7,000 back every year for their taxes? Do you know how many years it'll take me to get $7,000 back in taxes?
Scratch that.
Do you know how many decades it would take?
How many decades? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, look, as I said, there's a concerted effort to split America up as well as the rest of the world, and this is part of it. The Battle of the Sexes may or may not have been funded by a Soros counterpart back in the 70s, but it's certainly being taken advantage of now in order for you, me, Kendrick, Ted, and everybody else to take a back seat to, and as I agree with you from what you said last week, females, I don't even want to call them women because there are women and there are females. Not every female is a woman, but every woman is a female. So I'm going to say females are the inferior part of our species. They're smaller, yes, shorter, dumber, have less, can't handle stress, less productive in the workplace, and we look to them for, you know, to be our partners. And if they knew what to do, they would be worthy of being our power, our partners. But they want to continue the battle of the sexes. They want to continue this competitiveness. It's bullshit.
But Joe, do you know the number one thing I hear, and this is from mostly, I'm not saying black men don't do it, because some black men do it as well. But the vast majority of white men, whenever I hear them describe white women, oh, she's so strong, she's a firecracker, man. You better watch out. She'll take your head off. She'll do all this bullshit that he knows she can't do. Like, you're supposed to be scared of this 5'1", 95-pound individual that you tower over.
Yeah, but you know why? Because white men are more conditioned than black men. Hispanic men with their macho bullshit. Well, not the Asian men so much, right? Unless they come here and they've lived in America for a while. But white men are conditioned to be gentlemen and to take a look at women as sugar and spice and all things nice. And that continues with them being imbued in their neural system until they die. They know something's wrong, but they don't know how bad and how wrong it is. They keep thinking it's their fault because their women keep looking at them and saying, it's your fault, it's your fault, it's your fault.
And this is why I laugh at those the white nationalists who say you know, those black men need to stay away from our women and blah blah blah. It's like, wait a minute, buddy, wait, whoa, we have nothing to do with that. Your women are choosing not to fuck you and have your children. So if you want to blame somebody for killing off the white race, blame your women. They're the ones choosing not to have white babies.
Right.
Hey, good but point. No, because unless they're
and the more you empower them, the less they want to have white babies.
Well, wait. So I want to bring this. I'm going to show a video by a guy, Charles Murray. He's going to actually address some of what you're saying, Chris. Let me drop this. Charles Murray. He wrote a book called. And Chris, I think it's you who's got some buzzing going on. Go on mute. Your phone is
buzzing. No, I'm muted, Ted. I'm muted. I just muted.
All right. Yeah, it's gone. I don't know who that was. All right. This is Charles Murray. He's the author of a book called Coming Apart, and he's in 4 minutes. He's going to talk about what some aspects of his book and what he sees in the U.S.
So. Charles Murray, this terrific book you wrote 2 years ago, Coming Apart. I want to see that it's what it's all about.
What's Coming Apart
and why should we be worried about it?
Okay.
Coming Apart has a very straightforward thesis, which is that over the course of the last 50 years, we have seen the development of classes in the United States that are different in kind from the classes we've had before. We've always had rich people and poor people. That is not new. What is new is a divergence in the culture of the classes. Even though we were not a classless society, even as recently as 1960, on a variety of important social and institutions, I'm thinking of things like marriage, about participation in religion, about, for that matter, participation in the labor force, there were very small differences between working class and upper class. The paradigmatic example of that is marriage. In 1960, among whites ages 30 to 49, those in the upper middle class, in the professions or in managerial positions, 94% were married. That's 1960. And as of 2010, 84% were married. Furthermore, the rate of divorce has been declining, and the rate of marriage has held steady in the upper middle class since the 1980s. So marriage is alive and well in the upper middle class, and in many ways is getting better.
So just a quick comment. One of the things that he talked about in his book is what the 1970s did. In the 1970s, disrupted a steady statistic of marriage. And as you see, from 1960, 94% of the upper class white-collared workers had 94% marriage rate, and it actually dropped down to it dropped down to 84%, and it was because the 1970s brought, or the late 60s and early 70s brought free love, and people skipped over marriage, and it was all about free love and what, you know, you could say drugs and irresponsible society. But that upper class, they got off that boat. And, you know, even though it dropped from 94 to 84, wait till you hear what he says about the working class.
In the white working class, meaning those with blue-collar jobs or low-level service jobs, 1960, 84% for men. If there was a class difference, it was quite small. Marriage was still the overwhelming norm for organizing communities. By 2010, same population, white ages 30, 49, 48% were married. From 84% to 48%.
Hey, you guys have to go on mute because there's some buzzing. I don't know whose phone that is.
I'm on mute.
All right. So it could be me then. So if you heard that, the working class was 84% marriage rate, and now it's 2015 was 48%. That's a huge, huge drop. And so we're seeing is what Chris was talking about, you know, not having babies, or, you know, I have my own money, I don't need a man. But the 70s surely impacted them too, and the whole free love and promiscuity and not needing a man. The upper classes still continue to get married, but the working and the lower classes have abandoned it. And then that has a sort of a domino effect. And he's going to talk about that.
In 50 years, that's a huge thing. The huge divergence. The book is first takes a long look at the new upper class and its culture, and its segregation from the rest of the society, and then it takes a long look at the new lower class and does the same thing. And the conclusion at the end of it all is that we are in great danger of the American project unraveling. And I did some minor reasons for optimism, but for the money. You have working class communities that don't function the way they used to in fundamental ways. Just let me run over some of the ways. I talked about what's happening with marriage. That has a huge impact on social capital, because so much of social capital is generated by parents trying to shape the community in ways that will help their children. You've had a huge decline in religiosity. Well, as we all know from Robert Putnam, about 50% of social capital is directly related to religion, and whether it's volunteering or contributions or participations in organizations, when you get that kind of decline in religiosity, you also have a whole lot of social capital. So, and then on top of all that, you have a whole lot more guys outside the labor force than you had before, and you have a lot more single men in the community. And that has social consequences as well. I mean, the cliche that marriage civilizes men is a cliche because it has a lot of truth to it. And one of the most important chapters in the book in this regard is about a real working class community, which that brings the statistics to life, the ways in which a formerly highly functional community, maybe tougher than the communities we live in, more bar fights than the communities we live in, but low crime, stable families, lots of good things about the way that's pretty much disintegrated. And that's going on not just in urban working class communities, going on in Midwest small towns and other places that you wouldn't expect.
So I wanted to play that and look
from the new book, Coming Apart, quote, "If the case I have made is completely correct, all is lost."
Okay. Sorry about that. I played that to look at, you know, Chris, you were talking about making babies. So a lot of women have decided that they were not going to make children, that they could have their own money and do their own thing. And then there are the women who decided they would have children anyway because they have their own money, and they'll be promiscuous. And I don't think he necessarily addresses that. He talked about how marriage can civilize men, but no one's really talking about how marriage civilizes women, because it women, and I've done shows on this, more than one. National Institute of Health, NIH, looked at when women are promiscuous, it puts them in depression, it creates emotional trauma, and in worst case, it creates mental illnesses. So if you have women out here who are mentally ill and raising children, then we're going to see things like higher crime rates, and perhaps that's part of what's showing up in the domestic violence statistics, where women are 70% of the time initiating it. There are over 3 million cases of women reporting violence by their male partner. That's over 3 million. And then there are over 4 million of cases reported of the woman initiating abuse to the male. So we've been talking about how horrible men are and all the abusive things, but the statistics are showing that that has changed. And maybe men were more aggressive before. This guy just said, you know, in these working class communities, you have more bar fights, perhaps, than you see now. So men, you could say, maybe are more tame. But what you had bar fights where two guys just slugged it out, or maybe the whole bar, but it was contained to the bar. Now we have shootouts, mass shootings. We have drive-bys. We have these things that, and these children are coming out of single-parent homes. So when I ask the question, who's winning, the obvious, you know, people have said women are winning in the court. Someone said women are winning in weight gaining, right? So, but PJ, you said women winnings are not authentic. They are allowed. I want to show you guys one other thing here. The CEO.
But that's what I said. I said they're.
Go ahead. You said they're what?
Yeah, so that's what I said. They're winning because we. It's of course it's a. It's a false sense of accomplishment, because they're only winning because we set up the arena for them to win in. If we're playing a video game and I start you off on level 99 and you make it to level 100, you didn't beat that video game by yourself. No, you beat it because I got you to the end and you just walked across the finish line.
Right. So do you guys know who, anyone know who the CEO is of General Motors?
No.
I used to know, it used to be, I think it was a guy named Stone. He was famous, but that was, I think he's dead now. But the current owner? No. Nah. Patty, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I heard you.
Oh, okay.
I wanted to put a picture up.
All right. And to dovetail off of what Chris was saying, while you're going looking for that picture, The battle of the sexes will also have a misrepresentation because there's a positive undercurrent associated with the battle of the sexes. If the women win, then yes, it's good for them, but I think it's assumed also that it would be good for us if women win, because if they're going to be on par with men, then they're going to share what they earn, share what they accomplish, and just be the right partner that we want them to be. But we all know differently. We all know that your money is my money, and my money is my money.
So how do we add, Ted, how do we add the ruling class in the middle of all this? Because they divorces stayed low while, you know, while the majority, like Chris saying, the majority or everybody else, the rate's staying high. But they not having the problem that we have for
right.
some strange reason.
Kendrick, I'm going to ask you to ask that question in about 10 minutes, and we're going to address
that.
Oh,
okay. Okay.
Okay. So the CEO of General Motors is Mary Barra. I don't think she's Latina. In Spanish, Barra. But Barra, I guess, is the way they pronounce it. She's been the CEO since January of 2014. And I looked at Foreman.
Why does this not surprise me?
Yep. So she's 59 years old. Her birthday is this month, so she'll be 60 Christmas Eve. So she's 60-year-old woman, and she's been the CEO. It'll be it's 7 years she's been the CEO. So no one's – I asked you guys, you didn't know that a woman was the CEO of General Motors, and that should be a cause for concern by itself. The fact that know that.
You could kind of infer that by the number of times GM has had to been bailed out by the government.
Well, that was before she was CEO. That was the Chrysler and GM. Ford was the only one that didn't get bailed out. And I think they say the reason Ford didn't is because the Ford family owns about 26% of stock, and they have a lot of say over what happens in a company. So they didn't take the kind of risks. They didn't do some stupid things that Chrysler and GM did. But the bigger point I want to make is that with a woman, the first time a woman being the CEO of General Motors, if this woman was doing an extraordinary job, it would be splattered all over the news. She is really not doing a good job. There's some revenue decline going on. I mean, she's had some increase in revenue, but she is not. She's had consecutive years of declining revenues in this company. And this is before the pandemic, so it can't be put on a pandemic. 2019, 2018, both declining years, and in 2017, it was only a 1% increase, which, you know, that's really dismal. But, you know, we're talking 2017, 1% decrease, 2018, 6%, 6.5%, and 2019 was 10.75% decline. So if a woman was running GM and knocking the ball out the park, we would be hearing about why all Fortune 500 companies should be led by women. So it's silent. The reason you guys didn't know is because she's CEO, and she was – now, just listen to what I just said, declining revenues. And look at this. For General Motors revenue for the quarter ending September 30th, 2021, was $26 billion. And that's a 24.52% decline for year over year for September of 2020. This is a problem. And this woman is still CEO. So we're
who's gonna fire a woman?
Look, I there's where the problem, right? So you guys keep saying it's being allowed. Like, she's being allowed to fail and no one's kicking her out. Now, I don't know what guidelines the board has set in and what they will allow and say, hey, you know, 5 years in a row of declining revenues, we kick you out. I don't know. But the board is the only ones who can fire her. They hired her.
We've talked about this tons of times, that all these companies, they promote these women to the CEO and CFO positions, and the minute they get in those positions, the first thing they do is start losing money for that company, to the point where a lot of the times they bankrupt the company, and the company, you know, they forfeit all their assets. They end up losing. They end up shutting down. They end up getting sold off. Now, GM's so big it won't fail, you know, but, yeah, they're going to take losses for years until she decides to retire or step down or whatever.
10 years, they look at a lot of Fortune 500 company CEOs usually put in, like, 10 years. A lot of Fortune 500 CEOs tend to agree that 10 years is a good time to serve in that position. So she's at 7, and she's had years of poor performance.
Right, and while she's taking these losses, let's look up the bonus money that she gives herself every year, because they give themselves bonuses every year, and it's usually in the millions.
Right. I understand that. Right, they don't take it as salary; they take it in capital gain. They'll take it in stocks, which is taxed at 15%, which is much lower. So her salary, I didn't look that up. Let her salary could be $10 million. Then she'll make another, $50 million in stock options, which gets taxed differently. So, which is, that's generally the strategy that most executives, the officers in these large companies do, because that money gets taxed at a much lower rate. So what the real thing that I'm getting at is, we're saying that women can do better, and she's performing poorly, and the media isn't pushing it. No one's saying, hey, this woman is doing a poor job. This is sort of like principally the same as the whole, women are comparing themselves. What they're calling good performance is like Billie Jean King, 29-year-old. She was ranked number one of female players, plays a retired, a former professional male who's 55 years old and hasn't trained to compete in decades. And that's how women are gauging that they are good, they're the best. So whatever she's using to gauge being the best, we don't hear anything about GM doing great. We don't hear about them doing poorly. We don't hear about any breakthroughs. I forget the woman's name who was the CEO of HP, Hewlett-Packard. So you heard nothing about that either. Like, you just don't hear about the women doing a great job and create. You don't hear, you've never heard of a female Steve Jobs or a Walt Disney or the CEO's founder and his son of IBM, like these guys who do these phenomenal things. You just don't hear it. And women will keep saying, well, we need time. I mean, you're the CEO of GM. GM is like, what, number 22? It's in the top 25 of Fortune 500 companies. Revenues, I don't know, 120 billion plus. So there's plenty of exposure, plenty of opportunity to get exposed, but this is what women would call winning. And I don't know what the excuses women would have when you say, well, she's underperforming. What are they going to say? Well, you guys are just being hard If it was a man, you wouldn't do, you know, what are all the things that we would hear if we pointed this out to women that she's underperforming? She's still winning, or she's still getting paid. She's getting money. She's getting millions. You're jealous. Like we'd hear that.
They have no real metric to measure their success because they know that if you look at the metrics to measure their success, they're not successful.
Yeah, but the boards of directors for companies like this have metrics. They do. Ross Perot used to sit on the board of GM. They actually paid
him. No. I'm not talking about men. The boards are primarily men, right? But I'm talking about women in general. Women, if you start bringing up facts and statistics to women, it doesn't matter to them. They don't care. As long as they're making more money than men, as long as they're getting more money than men, that's all that matters. As long as there's one woman that does it, all women are winning. Like you and I can sit here all day long and say, no, just because Bill Gates, or not Bill Gates, what's his name? Elon Musk. Just because Elon Musk is winning and he's a billionaire, it doesn't mean you and I are winning. No, that's his money. Those are his accomplishments. That's his money. It has nothing to do with us. But to women, the minute one woman does something, even though she's failing at it, if you bring up the statistics, it doesn't matter. She's getting money, and all women are winning. Look how black women. Look at Oprah. You'll have black women on welfare, working at Walmart and stripping, but still saying, I'm still telling you that you're broke because Oprah has millions.
Right.
Yeah, man, it's a level of delusion.
I talked to a girl. There was a girl the other day on TikTok. They just being raised in a culture that where no matter what they do, it's better than men, right? So there's this girl. And she was talking about her teacher, her history teacher. She was saying that he thought he was God's gift to the world simply because he was pronouncing a word the right way. The word was Grenada. She was saying that her parents were from Trinidad and Tobago and that she's been to Grenada, and everybody in Grenada pronounces it Grenada. So in class, when he was talking about the country of Grenada, he kept saying Grenada, Grenada, Grenada. And she goes, excuse me, do you mean Grenada? Because I've never heard of Grenada before, but Grenada is the country. You keep pronouncing it wrong. So I said, well, let's look it up. Let's look it up and let's see the correct way that it's pronounced. So let's go to Wikipedia and let's go to Webster's. Let's go to everywhere and see if your teacher, if this male teacher truly was, you know, truly thought he was God's gift to the earth, or if he was actually right. So when I looked it up and pointed it out to her, you know what she said? Well, that's not the way the people there pronounce it. I said, I have cousins who are so country that they can't say the word street. They say screet, but that doesn't mean they're right.
Area code.
Yeah, I can't hear you say your volume is too low.
All right, I'm not sure why.
Oh, there it goes. Much better now.
Okay. Area code 310, you're live and on the air with Street Talk. What's your name and where you calling from?
Hey, what's going on, gentlemen? It's Reg. I'm up in the hot spot again, getting my party on, so it's a little loud here. So I'll listen in, and maybe I'll weigh in when I step out, okay, guys?
All right, good enough. Yep. Thank you.
All right.
But, imagine the audacity of this girl to say that her male teacher thought he was God's gift to the world simply because he was pronouncing a word the right way.
I understand.
Conditioned at a very young – misandry is being planted in them at a very young age. They're being taught to hate men at a very young age for men simply existing.
So if we start talking about the battle of the sexes, so it appears in the minds of women that they are winning. They're before the pandemic 51% of the workforce female. Last year, 900,000 women left the workforce because they were single mothers primarily, and they stayed home. Even women who were married, they were actually able to stay home because they had a husband who continued to work. But those women who were single mothers, a lot of them have been in a bad situation. OnlyFans, I think 1 million new people on OnlyFans. So, you know, and there are women making money. What the average is like, what, $500 or less a month that they're making. So more women are on OnlyFans. You're getting more sex workers, the chat room. So sex work has increased since the pandemic. Significantly increased. That is how women are supplementing their income, especially the single mothers, even some of the non-single. So, you know, that has us ask, are women really winning? They're winning in degrees and PhDs. I see. Yep. There are more women getting PhDs. There are more programs that support women getting free education. But a lot of them are getting loans. Some of them take 30 years to pay off their loans. You know, you're paying off $400,000 for law school, not even counting undergrad. So, but that could make it clear in their mind that we advanced. We're doing better than our mother and grandmothers. We have our own money, and I'm winning. So more women are teachers. Here's one of the things. So, you know, are men winning in the gender wars? And I would say women fired the first shot and men were not even looking to be in a gender war. Like I said, men were very much like deer in the headlights. And so there are more men dealing with abusive women in relationships, whether it's marriage or common law marriage or just cohabitating. A lot of men seem to think that, well, if we just let it all crash, but then the reality of letting it all crash is cutting off your nose to spite your face. And that becomes more like a desperation move. In the game of chess, you could lose your queen. So the game of chess, the most important piece on the chessboard is the king. That determines who wins and loses. You lose your king to your opponent, you lost the game. You could lose your queen, which is capable of making more different moves on the board than any other piece, but you could lose your queen and still win. Now, sometimes people lose their queen out of desperation because they're losing, but other times you sacrifice your queen to win the game. It's a very bold move to do that. So if that's one way that men could look at when they say let it crash, but it really is very much cutting off your nose to spite your face. And if you cut off your nose to get back at women, is that a move out of desperation because men have run out of answers of how to resolve this? So, you know, are men winning if they have no way of knowing how to neutralize the situation? So it could seem like women are just winning. I mean, there are men who are violent in ways that crime has risen, right? So you have more gangs, you have more shootings. You have men who are violating the laws and drive-bys and selling drugs and doing drugs. You have higher rates of suicide for men. You could say, you know, based on these things, men are losing, you know, but men are still thriving in oil rigs and sanitation workers. And coding. So there are places where women are given the opportunity to go into these areas, like to work on an oil rig, to work in the coal mines, to do coding. These areas are all open to women, but women won't take them. Kendrick talked about AI, and they're looking at AI in a way that a lot of people who are in white-collar jobs, finance, accounting, there are so many places where AI is about to annihilate those jobs. And a lot of those jobs are held by women. And I don't think women are paying attention to what is going to happen. So, you know, Chris, you talked about in Atlanta, they're giving women a check just for being a woman. Maybe that's the future, because if AI disrupts the workforce, you know, technology has already taken jobs away. Just look at agriculture. If we go back, let's say, to the 1850s, 97% of the workforce in the U.S. was focused on agriculture, and now it's only about 3%. The technology wiped out a whole lot of jobs, even though you still have low-wage jobs like picking strawberries and cabbage and, you know, these jobs where people come across the border from Mexico to take, and they're making very little money. You still have those. But there are a lot of other agriculture jobs that have been just wiped out from technology. And men have lost those jobs. But
yeah, AI, and another thing too, Ted.
Go ahead.
No. Okay. You have to take a look at the greater political spectrum as well. Political candidates in the Democratic Party, we're talking about a single, I forgot the exact name for it now, it just jumped off my tongue. If you didn't work, you could still get paid. AOC was talking about it. I forget the exact name, the name for it. Single pay, some kind of crap like that. They were trying to follow the European model, which is what some states were, some countries were introducing in their particular nations. And it's meant to give complete control over to the government so that they, at any time they wish, can pull the rug out from underneath us. So we also have to take, as I was saying at the beginning, we have to take a look at the greater political spectrum, not only the battle of the sexes, but how that...
Keep going, Joe. You're a little bit ahead of me. That's where I was going, because I was like...
I'm going to put myself on mute because you're going to cover it, and my my phone is probably acting up.
Yo, T.
Kendrick, you were going to say something?
Yes, sir. People, they talking about the women, okay, but when I look at the pharmaceutical, the big pharma tech corporations did in the... in the medical field, I think men still dominate those two fields. Am I correct?
I don't know. I that's a good question.
Because those men in those fields, you know, is we ain't hear nothing about the men who've been in those positions ever lost those positions. With all this stuff going on right now, the pharmaceuticals and the big drug industries, the medical industry, that's what I'm saying.
Well, no. So if you say in the research, like science and research, medical research, mostly men are doing that, you know, that I would think that falls under STEM, and women just are not gravitating to that. Like a lot of those professions require much higher IQs than a lot of women. Most high IQs are held by men, not women. So it's not. I'll just leave it there. So we keep trying to force women to go into those areas. A lot of times they're not really qualified. A couple of months ago, I played a video of a Russian woman who has an IT company, and she needs people who can code. And she said she tried. She was all for, we are women, and she hired only women. And she said they sucked at coding and they didn't want to work. And so she just hired all men. The men are better at coding. They work late nights. And she's much more successful. Well, what's interesting? You can't hear me, Ted. You can't hear me. Interesting. Not at all. I don't understand why. That's wild. You don't hear anything.
I can hear you.
No, you do. That was IG. But Miss Twist is you guys are getting where I'm going in Darwin, Colorado. What's going on, Miss Twist? Darwin, good to see you. The solution, don't play the game, right? So who has set up the game? You know, I heard Joe talking about one of the Rockefellers said they financed that. You know, there are words that the Rothschilds, that they financed the both world wars, and they finance both sides. They win. It's like they don't care who's fighting. They win either way. And then when your city, your country is bombed, they'll loan you money to rebuild. So, you know, in a stock market, you can make money if the market goes up, and you can make money if the market goes down. So people who have a lot of money understand that idea that it doesn't matter. You're going to make money on either side of the table if you know how to hedge your bets, so to speak, and you can say that is what's happening.
Yeah, man. I mean, if you look at those names that you just stated, Ted, those men not playing to lose. Them dudes, they looking at the long run, Ted, and I don't see them losing no money no time soon.
And when you're talking about hedging your bets, so to say, no, it's not just as it were. They're using options and futures in order to do that. It's a rigged game, and those who are very wealthy know how to play it. It's always been rigged.
Right.
No matter what market you're into. Doesn't matter if it's Forex or if it's the stock market or the commodities exchange.
I want to play a I think this is the one I want to play. This is a short video.
Hi, I'm Emily from Minotaur, and these two swans are in love. Or at least, that's what it looks like. But the more we dig into mating in the animal world, the less sweet it gets. Coming up, four short stories to prove it. Starting with, do these swans really mate for life?
Monogamy, the practice of mating with a single individual for an extended period of time, isn't that popular in the animal kingdom. Only about 3% of mammals are monogamous, and although 95% of birds pair off, at least for one breeding season, paternity tests have revealed that the avian world is chock-full of cheaters. The least loyal bird species might be the superb fairy wren. They form lifelong bonds, and if you watched a pair of them from morning till night for an entire breeding season, you'd think they were perfectly faithful. But that's only because female fairy wrens cheat under cover of darkness. Using radio transmitters to track their movements, researchers discovered that fertile females make daily pre-dawn flights to other territories. These trips only last about 15 minutes, but apparently that's more than long enough. DNA tests show that just 25% of baby superb fairy wrens are their father's biological offspring. Even though modern genetics might be deflating our romantic notions about lovebirds, from a biological standpoint, pairing up with one individual and then copulating with others on the side makes a lot more sense than absolute sexual loyalty. For birds, pairing up is a good strategy because their young require a ton of care. So males increase their chances of successful reproduction if they stick around and lend a beak. On the other hand, putting all of one's eggs in a single basket is a risky proposition. So it also makes sense for males to try and slip some of their genetic material into a few other nests if they can. Females, of course, can't have more than one nest, but they can sneak around with other guys, so their eggs have some variety. Cheating might also help explain the otherwise unexpected physical differences between males and females in apparently monogamous species. We've long had a solid explanation for this kind of male-female dimorphism in explicitly non-monogamous species, because if a male plans to mate with many females, he needs to win their affection and fend off other suitors. Over thousands of generations, the traits that help him successfully mate can become more and more pronounced, even if they serve absolutely no other purpose. For example, male gorillas who fight each other for exclusive mating rights with the females in their clan are much larger than female gorillas, while male and female gibbons, which are monogamous, are the same size. Which brings us to our favorite primate species, Homo sapiens. There are undeniable physical differences between males and females, but it's unclear clear whether they're pronounced enough to suggest that our ancestors lived in harems like gorillas, or whether our differences just stem from a monogamous but adulterous society like the superb fairy wrens. But one thing is clear. Among all the species on Earth, monogamy is rare, and monogamy without cheating is rarer. There is, however, at least one known example of perfect lifelong fidelity, and its name is Diplozoon paradoxum. When two of these young flatworms find each other, they literally fuse together to form what looks like a single organism. And this adultery-free union lasts for their entire long and amorous lives, which they spend sucking blood from fish gills, a truly romantic attachment.
So blood-sucking flatworms might be as romantic as the animal world really gets. To make matters worse, even when males and females appear to be getting along, from a biological perspective, they're actually locked in an eternal battle of the sexes. Check it out. To pass their genes along to the next generation, most animals need a partner. So in one sense, mating is cooperative, with each partner contributing half their DNA to the offspring. But mating also involves plenty of competition between the sexes. That's because both males and females are hardwired to try to make babies that can survive and reproduce. But they do this in totally different ways. Ways that actually threaten the other sex's genetic legacy. For males, it's all about quantity. Sperm are easy to mass produce, and most males spend little time or energy parenting. So their best mating strategy is to breed in bulk. The more offspring they have, the better the odds that some will thrive. For most females, this strategy doesn't work because they have a limited supply of eggs and spend lots of time and energy caring for their young. Instead, females want to make sure that they can get the best dad for every one of their offspring. Some choose only to mate with the biggest, flashiest, or best-behaved males. Others mate with multiple males and then choose a winner. Chickens, for instance, can selectively squirt out sperm from subpar suitors. But the pickier females are, the tougher it is for the average male to make babies. So males have evolved ways to limit females' discretion. In some species, males take their mates through brute force, while males in other species take the slightly less unsavory approach of obsessively following their mates around to keep other suitors away. Male squirrels try to ensure fidelity by plugging females' reproductive tracts with a fluid that hardens after sex, creating...
Pearls. The male clogs up her old system.
A sort of biological chastity belt. And male fruit flies go even further. Along with their sperm, they release a chemical cocktail that deactivates other sperm, stimulates ovulation, and kills their partner's future sex drive with an anti-aphrodisiac. In response, females develop counter strategies to regain the upper hand, or wing, or paw. Some female squirrels, for instance, have figured out how to pluck out their chastity plug. And in other species, like ducks and hyenas, females have evolved maze-like reproductive tracts that require their full cooperation to navigate. Males evolve in response, and the sexual arms race keeps escalating, which explains why some ducks have penises that look like this. In general, the more promiscuous the species males are, the choosier the females, and the more intense the sexual arms race. On the other hand, in species in which partners tend to have longer-term relationships and raise offspring together, like Homo sapiens, reproductive success for one partner also means success for the other. So the two sexes' baby-making strategies line up more closely. But even the possibility of non-monogamy is enough to spark some subtle subterfuge. Although seemingly romantic, a wedding ring is really just a gilded form of guarding our mate. So the next time you see a boy and girl dress together in the park, it's not cute. It's mate guarding.
Yeah, Miss Twist, right. Humans actually believe they have evolved beyond being animals. We really are. We are animals first. All mammals are part of the animal group. So are reptiles and amphibians and fowl.
And speaking of ducks, that insane-looking duck penis we just showed you owes its weirdness in part to a quirk of bird genetics. The Argentine lake duck's spiraling penis extends more than 16 inches. The seagull, on the other hand, doesn't have a penis at all. For two animals with so much else in common, this is a pretty big spectrum.
I've actually heard women say, if they could, they'd take their husband and their son's penis and put it in the drawer when they leave the house, and they'd only be able to get it when they come back. It seems like some men actually live that way.
In fact, birds exhibit the biggest range in relative penis size of any class of vertebrates. And there are a couple of key reasons why. For one, male birds are uniquely set up to pass helpful sexual traits directly to their son. Traits like showy mate-attracting tail feathers or genitalia of certain dimensions. Animals generally hand these kinds of traits down through their sex chromosomes. But the sex chromosome male mammals pass on to their sons is pretty tiny and has relatively few genes. Male birds, on the other hand, have way bigger chromosomes with lots of genes and therefore have higher chances of passing a mutation, like one for extra sexy tail feathers, directly to their sons, who in turn can attract more mates and potentially pass mutation for extra, extra sexy tail feathers to their sons, and so on down the line. In short, male birds' comparatively huge sex chromosomes are the reason much more exaggerated male traits have evolved in birds than in mammals. Like the lake duck's really long penis. Male ducks often mate with unwilling females by force, and it happens that the males with the longest and twistiest genitals are the most successful, which means the longest and twistiest genital genes keep getting passed down from father to son. On the other hand, in bird species where less well-endowed males do better, maybe because females prefer them, or because big genitals can make flight tough, males can end up with little nubs, or even no penises at all. One other reason the bird penis spectrum is so big is that it's really easy to make a bird penis shrink. A single mutation on the bird's large sex chromosome triggers production of a protein that basically erases the developing embryo's penis. All it then takes to make the entire species penisless is for this mutation to get passed down the line from male to male. But given how the chromosomal arrangement of birds allows more male traits to change more easily, even penislessness isn't permanent. The chachalaca, a wild cousin of the chicken, went from having a penis to not having one to growing one again. I wish I could say that we're done with animal penises for the day, but thanks to the female hyena, that's only sort of true.
What they're going to play now is really the reason I wanted you to see this video. And Reggie, if you can still hear, you want to listen to this. This is interesting. This is going to address social dynamics. And it's relative to who's winning the battle of the sexes.
First, though, let's talk about the gentler sex, which in hyenas is the male. This is Scarface, one of the hyenas I studied in Kenya. And like all male spotted hyenas, his life sucks. Babyhood is actually the pinnacle of a male hyena's life. Itty bitty cubs of both sexes rank just below their mom, who make up the entire top of the clan's social hierarchy. So cubs have decent access to food, sleeping spots, and everything else. But male cubs' glory days are short. Females generally don't like mating with males from the clan they grew up in. It's probably nature's way of avoiding inbreeding. So once males turn two or so, they leave their clan and strike out on a lonely, dangerous search for a clan with better mating prospects. Lots of other mammalian males do the same thing, but for them, the transition to a new group is an opportunity to challenge high-ranking individuals and increase their social standing. Not so for male hyenas. They endure aggressive hazing by the new clan before even being allowed to join. And once a male does gain acceptance, he becomes the very lowest-ranking hyena in the pecking, or bone-cracking, order. The tastiest food rarely makes its way down to him, and there's no way to move up the social hierarchy besides simply waiting, either for new males to join the clan below him or for males ahead of him to die. No adult male will ever top a single female, resulting in a female-dominated hierarchy. This is all weird. Unlike most mammals, male hyenas are subordinate to females, which is probably because, unlike most mammals, female hyenas are bigger and meaner than males, which is probably thanks to their need to stand up for their offspring in this kind of crazy feeding frenzy. And, unlike pretty much all mammals, physically fit or socially capable individuals can't make their way to the top of hyena society to do most of the decision and baby making. They're the only social mammals we know of with such a rigid hierarchy, and we don't yet know why.
I'm going to let this play more. Think about what she's saying about women being at the top, and I just talked about the CEO of General Motors not even performing well. Oftentimes, when you get a woman in a management position, one of the first things that happens is she starts filling other positions below her. with women, even if they don't perform as well. And Miss Twist, I hear you. You don't like the voice. So let's finish. Not much left to go.
We do know the outcome, though. Male hyenas like Scarface end up plagued with injuries from harassment and hazing, endure prematurely worn down teeth from eating too many bones, and on average only live half as long as females do. The best they can hope for is that at the end of the day, they'll have left behind a few cubs, which is not the best for the ones that turn out to be males. So female hyenas have some of the perks that nature usually gives to males, but also some of the parts, and in this case, some of the perky parts. Take a look. Before we start, I want to let you know that this video covers the ins and outs of hyena genitalia.
So our human female operates, wants to, and can operate very much like a female hyena. The male hyena is not valued at all. And you see, he lives, the life expectancy is only half. His teeth are worn out because he doesn't get the best food. He's smaller. So when nature designed human beings, it knew to make men stronger, bigger and stronger than women. Otherwise, this is what life would look like, and there would be significantly more abuse by women in any country.
So if that's not something you're keen to learn about, you can check out some of our other videos. But from the comments on our recent hyena video, we learned that a lot of people are really curious about what exactly is going on with hyena genitalia. And they're not alone. Everyone from Aristotle to Hemingway to a host of modern scientists has been interested in why exactly female spotted hyenas seem to have penises. Females urinate through these 7-inch-long phalluses, and they're fully erectile. But since they don't deliver sperm, they aren't actually penises. They're elongated clitorises. Spotted hyenas are the only hyena species to sport these so-called pseudopenises. And while a few other female mammals have male-like genitalia, the spotted hyena is the most male-like by far, complete with a pseudo-scrotum. All the female reproductive parts are there, but the entrance is so unwieldy that females have to mate and give birth through what's essentially a penis. Mating via pseudopenis is about as awkward as you might imagine.
Oh my God, I'm showing porn. Hyena porn. Hey guys, if you haven't smashed that like button, smash it. If you're not subscribed to my channel, this is a good time to do that and hit the bell so you get notifications, and make sure you click on all when you hit the bell so that you receive notifications whenever I post something. And share this. Like, this is a conversation men and women need to have for sure. All right, let me just bang out the rest of this, Kendrick, all right?
In order to make sex possible, the female actually has to retract her pseudopenis. So male hyenas can't force females to have sex. And speaking of which, we got a lot of comments about female hyenas forcing sex on males. But there just isn't any evidence that this ever happened. Then there's giving birth.
So we do know there are some women who use a strap-on, and some guys actually go for that. So many men have set themselves up, even if it's not physically happening, it's mentally happening.
Which involves forcing a 4-pound cub through an inch-wide, 23-inch-long birth canal, which is not easy. For first-time moms, somewhere around 60% of cubs get stuck in this gauntlet and suffocate before they're even born. And a dead cub stuck in a mom's pseudopenis can be fatal to her, too. A mom's pseudopenis actually has to rip for her to give birth successfully, which leaves behind a stretchy patch that does make birth easier the next time. In our earlier video, we talked about why it sucks to be a male hyena, but there's also a lot that sucks about being a female hyena. So why do they have such incredibly unwieldy genitalia? Is fending off male suitors so critical that pseudopenises evolved as protection? Doubtful. Females are dominant enough to keep suitors in check without any help. Are female hyenas this time to confuse others into thinking they're male? Probably not. Even experienced humans can tell what's pseudo and what's not. And hyenas have lots of other ways of distinguishing females from males. So far, we just don't have a convincing explanation for why nature has also given female hyenas the shaft.
In some ways, that is, men are allowing that. In some ways, men are being treated that way. They really are. I know Chris brought up these guys who you call pseudo thugs, these wannabe thugs, and they end up getting treated just like that male hyena. So that I showed that because that really is starting to evolve, and you know, the whole notion of the male hyenas not getting the best food. If you give all jobs to women, they do not want to take care of men. They don't want to marry unemployed men. They don't want stay-at-home fathers. They want to be treated like a princess by a guy who makes more money than them. So this is a problem. So when you start asking who's winning the battle of the sexes, the more jobs you give to women, the less likely women get their fantasy of being the princess and finding this guy who's the prince and makes more money and takes care of her and lives happily ever after. The more women chase to displace men, women end up losing because the reality is women don't want to spend their life alone. You hear women say, oh, single women live longer, but no one's ever showed any empirical evidence to support that. There's zero evidence. And the way we know that women still want marriage, one, the number way women find wealth is through marriage. Two, women who are not finding a spouse, they're marrying themselves. They're marrying their dogs. I guess they'll marry hyenas soon. They're marrying other women. So women still want to marry, even though men are walking away.
Right. But Ted, here's the thing. You're looking at this from a logical male perspective. You're not viewing it through their eyes. There's a woman who married a ghost. Like, there's no way to prove that the ghost was even there, but she still went to a chapel, held an imaginary hand, and married a freaking ghost. So as long as they you know, in their mind they think they're winning, that's all that matters to them, even though we know they're losing. Like I said earlier, they have no metric to gauge whether they're winning or not, but they still say they're winning. And it's because no matter how much they lose, it's like the emperor's new clothes. You can't convince that motherfucker he's naked unless another emperor comes along and says, dude, why are you sitting there butt-ass naked?
No, but the story went that a child is the one who said, hey.
Right, well, a child, but yeah. But they don't listen to their children, you know, so it's going to take it takes other women to tell them that they're losing. And even when those women tell them that they're losing, 5 minutes later, they have short-term memories. So 5 minutes later, they're right back to thinking they're winning again because they won't allow themselves to be down for too long. So, and it doesn't matter. The metrics we keep trying to tell them, the standards we keep trying to put on them to show them that they're losing, that life is horrible, their life is horrible. We have actual data and statistics to back it up, but it doesn't matter to them.
But technically, no one is winning. And the people who are – so in the past 100 years, IQs have dropped 14 points. Children are being emotionally traumatized when you take a parent out the home. So you're weakening your children. Ultimately, this is going to become a matter of national security. We just did a mock exercise of a battle, the U.S. Marines against the British forces, and the Marines lost.
I'm not surprised.
It's not just as clear cut as you think. You can't keep breeding weaker children and expect that when someone like China or El Chapo comes up, that you actually have people. Miss Twist.
But you know the argument. You and I know the argument women will make for that. Well, we just need more women in charge because women are less likely to go to war. That's all they'll say.
Well, no, but Chris, I addressed
even
that.
Though statistics prove otherwise.
Right,
we have
right.
The data to prove otherwise. They'll just say that anyway.
Yep. So hold on. I want to bring in another caller. Area code. We just had a.
Oh.
Area code 321.
Hello.
321. You're live and on the air with Straight Talk. What's your name and where are you calling from? I was like, we have a lady
Hello.
On the line.
Yes, you don't recognize my, can you hear me?
Yes, we do.
Well, we'll see if she's a lady or not.
You don't recognize my voice?
It's Leticia.
Yes, it is.
How you doing, Leticia?
How are you?
Hello. I'm actually just listening in.
So we're asking, are women, who's winning the battle of the sexes? Who's winning? Has the battle of the sexes even produced a winner or a loser?
No one's winning. I would say the battle of the sexes, as of now, women are ahead, but there's no winner.
So you
women
why
don't
you...
feel like they're winning because
well,
ultimately it's left women not getting what they ultimately want, which is marriage and a family. So while they're benefiting from a lot of changes in society, it came at a detriment. The dating market has significantly changed from what they are used to and what they desire. While they've made some strides within society, it set them back in their dating and mating relationships. So there's no clear winner.
And IQ levels, but yeah. Not that women were ever smart, but yeah, their IQ levels have declined also.
Well, that's been across the board. The U.S. IQ, 14 points has dropped over the past 100 years.
I like that.
Look.
And the decline you talk about of IQ levels across the board in the U.S., Ted, is directly related to the amount of female teachers now and the educational sector. Remember, it used to be predominantly male.
Right, but this is what I was wanting to get out, is that this is how they know children are going to prison by the third grade because they administer tests that do an evaluation of IQ. And if the IQ is below a certain threshold, our society hasn't figured out what to do with people below a certain threshold. If your IQ is 83 or below, the military will not accept you under any circumstances. They've tried that, and it just doesn't work. It doesn't work out. So we don't know what else to do with those people who have the below average, well below average IQs. So the path becomes prison. And so one of the contributing factors, a major contributing factor to dropping IQ by that age, by third grade, is the repetition of trauma. So whether it's physical or mental, the brain doesn't know the difference between physical or verbal mental trauma. It's all the same, and it starts clogging up your brain's capacity to function, and you become what's called a lower IQ. Right? So it could be physical abuse. For sure, there's emotional abuse when one parent is not in the home, and if you start doing that for generations, that's going to have an impact. So that's a huge problem. So we have underestimated the sort of fallout, the consequences of having generations of single parent homes. we've underestimated the impact on society. I'm not saying that is 100% it, but it doesn't, it hurts us for sure.
It put a dent in the kid.
It definitely has a negative impact. And most parents are not equipped to deal with that kind of emotional trauma that the child has.
Then what you going to do with those emotional and trauma children when they grow up and turn loose into society, kid?
That's what we're looking at. That's why prison rates are going up. That's why violence is going up. That's why promiscuity is going up. You know, that's alcoholism, drug addiction, child abuse. All these things are increasing.
And those things are also being made legal because they're coping mechanisms for women, and that's why now you see a push to legalize sex work, to legalize all these drugs. It's because the psychological damage that they're doing to themselves, well, I'm not going to say they're doing it to themselves, because once again, I say it's, I can't stop saying this enough. It's not them empowering themselves. It's the men in power empowering them, and it's effectively destroying them. And they need those drugs, and they need all the sex to induce dopamine levels in their brains to cope with it. You know, they need coping mechanisms.
Yo, Chris, let me ask you something real quick. Cause see, I was born in '88, so I didn't see the crack epidemic of the '80s. But do you think that's a certain similarity to what you talking about now with giving the drug laws and all this stuff? Do you see the correlating to that and the crack epidemic of the 80s?
Not really. I think it's two separate different things, but I will say that the crack epidemic, yeah, it hit women hard too. I mean, yeah, it hit women extremely hard, but I don't think it's directly related to what's going on in society now with them legalizing cannabis and the opioids and all the other stuff.
Well, we had heroin.
Right, because I heard somebody say last year, or was it 2019, Chris, about an opioid epidemic. But wasn't nobody talking about the crack epidemic of the 80s. See what I'm saying?
No, but kids,
it's because the crack epidemic. Oh,
Kendrick, what you know,
the black people.
The Kendrick, in the late 60s and through the 70s, it was a heroin epidemic. It gutted a lot of cities, and that heroin epidemic just came back. It came back after we invaded Afghanistan. Like, it was, you knew that was going to happen.
Yeah, especially when regarding the poppy fields and wanting to increase the poppy outcome. Leticia, are you still there?
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay. You said that the women seem to be winning, but ultimately what they really want are marriages and family. Would that be under the same conditions of the women marrying up and always seeking a man with more money, and also for the women being in favor of the child support and alimony laws?
I didn't say the women seem to be winning. I said the women are slightly ahead because they're benefiting more from the changes that came in society.
Okay.
So.
And, all right, so they're benefiting, although they're not winning. So, what about my question?
I'm sorry, can you repeat the rest of the question?
Okay. You said that women really wanted marriage and family, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Would that be under the same conditions of looking for the man to make significantly more money and for the women to still be in favor of the current alimony and child support laws?
Okay, most women are actually looking for someone, looking for a man who makes what they make or more. And we all know that most women, the average makes about $40,000. But to your second point, yes, women still would want the alimony, more so if not alimony, but child support laws to stay in place, yes.
Okay. And what were you saying about the salaries?
The what?
The average man makes $40,000.
Average man makes $40,000.
And women
preference
make
of women.
Less than that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what if men just said, you know, I want a woman who makes about as much as me. I don't want to have to be the potential Daddy Warbucks, and I want a prenup that limits the amount of child support or alimony that I give her in case of divorce. Would that man be considered marriage material?
Well, I can't answer the child support question because that's governed by the state, not necessarily a prenup. But as far as the alimony in the prenup, I do believe that a good majority of women would, unless you are dealing with a high earner, which that's not going to be the case for a majority of women, outside of dealing with a high earner, women who are dealing with men who are make slightly more than them or they're staunchly in the middle class, they're fine with a prenup. I mean, they're not even going to be looking at a prenup as a way to find an out or a way to get over. I mean, you don't even really see prenups signed at that level. Now, if you're looking at extremely high earners, yeah, a woman who makes significantly less or she doesn't have any money and she's required to come in and step in her role and give up her autonomy, most of her autonomy, yeah, she's going to be looking for a prenup and as a way to secure, be secure in case something just happens. I'm sorry. I'm hoping I'm
sorry. I wasn't asking.
Like,
I wasn't asking about the about what the women want in terms of forming a prenup to protect their assets. I was asking if the women would take a look at the man who's insisting upon a prenup as good marriage material.
I believe majority of women, yes, they will.
They would. Okay.
Yes.
And why would you say that?
Because most women aren't, majority of women aren't out here trying to really get a man for his money. They're not. They understand that, hey, if it doesn't work out, I can walk away and I can make my own money. Majority of women still believe in this idealistic notion of love as being the foundation of the relationship. But I really don't see these conversations of a prenup. When I do see them, the women, for the most part, don't have a problem finding one. And that doesn't make him a bad guy if he does require one. I mean, that's just logical for him to present one. And I think most women understand that.
Well, if it's a high earner, yeah, but if it's a upper middle class, the women I've talked to, they will say, I'm offended because if the man presents a prenup, they don't want to sign it. And in terms of your saying that the women aren't looking for men, you know, to give them alimony, or to look for a man to kind of like pay their way after divorce. I don't know what kind of women you're talking to, but the kind of women and men I've been talking to for the last few years, the women absolutely want the alimony and definitely want the child support.
Well, I didn't say they didn't want alimony or child support, but that doesn't mean that they would balk at a prenup or make him out to be not a good man if he presents a prenup. It's just on that,
there's
that
all
basis.
Kinds of that you can look up right now of men leaving women at the altar simply because they wouldn't sign a prenup.
Okay,
we can look up. We can look up the source now.
I'm not arguing against that. He asked me my opinion, and I gave him my opinion based on the conversations that I have.
How many conversations do you think you have? You've had in the last, let's say, 10, 15 years with your girlfriends about that?
I don't really talk to my girlfriends about prenups. I talk to people in my professional capacity. And I could just say in just this year alone, I've had vlogged over 1,000 hours of conversation with both men and women.
And the women tell you that the men with prenups, they don't have a problem signing it. The upper middle class or middle class females that you talk to, they relatively don't balk at it. Profession are you in?
I am a certified professional matchmaker, and I'm also a dating strategist and specialist.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay. All right. Okay, thanks.
You're welcome.
I'm family to Rebecca Lynn Pope, are you, Letitia?
I'm sorry, what was that?
I'm saying, are you along the lines of Rebecca Lynn Pope?
In what way?
Just stop,
because it's all made up bullshit anyway. You can't, oh, my God, I'm not even going to go there.
All right. So one of the things, and I've participated in quite a few, not even a fraction of what Letitia has done, but there's that app Clubhouse. And Clubhouse has allowed for these forums, these conversational forums where people actually talk. There's no video. It's just audio. You can have up to 5,000 people in a room, and, you know, it's not uncommon to have a couple of hundred people in a room all discussing one topic, whether it's relationships, cryptocurrency, or anything else that you want to talk about. And I know Letitia has been doing that for a year, a little more than a year now. So it's fair to say that she's had thousands of conversations. Joe, to your specific answer, I don't know if those people are always in upper middle class. This whole upper class gets a little confusing because a lot of times it's more like it's analogous to someone in the poorer neighborhood winning the $100 million lottery. They just have a lot of money if they're still from a lower class, and that usually doesn't change. That doesn't put them in a higher class. It's just a poor person with money. So you have more and more people from lower classes getting education, and there are all kinds of programs and corporations that hire people that are disadvantaged. And now, you know, you come from a impoverished community, and now you make $150,000, but still might be lower class. But what I wonder, Joe, is people who are in those upper middle and above, they would be more familiar with the formality and the need to protect assets. So I would assume that you I'm making an assumption, Joe, that you may get less pushback because they're more familiar with that. But when you get someone who's from a lower class that now makes money and has access to a woman has access to a guy with money, she might have more pushback because she may not be as familiar with it. And there is this common notion that if you love me, if you wouldn't ask me to sign it, you would trust me, and, you know, this is going to work out. That's my
perspective. Right. Love me and trust me until I screw you over in divorce court.
Right. What's hard for people to see is that actually, because marriage is a legal binding contract, and a nuptial is a wedding. That's, you know, it's your marriage. What marriage is as a legal binding contract, it really is a prenuptial agreement. what is just sanctioned by the government. People have a hard time seeing it that way. What your prenuptial agreement is something that you sit down, you and your spouse-to-be, and you go over, you know, here's how we will deal with things if we divest, we terminate this marriage. If you don't do that, if you don't add that as an addendum to a marriage, which the government creates, you're going to deal with the prenuptial agreement that the government already has in place before you get married. It's a legal binding contract. And I know a lot of people don't look at it that way. So technically, if a woman says, you want me to sign this prenuptial agreement, that means you don't love me. A man could say, well, if you want me to marry you, if you want me to have this legal binding contract, then you must not trust or love me either, because we could technically just stay together. I mean, but really, marriage is about making your children the legal heirs to your estate, whatever you leave behind. I mean, that's ultimately what it's for. People try to make it into other things, but it's a legal binding contract. And it really is to legalize, have your children be legitimate heirs. There are all other things involved, but it's just the legal aspect of it is to protect your children, your offspring.
But Ted, when you start dealing with people that rule over countries, it's about bloodlines. That's what that's about.
Yeah, but it's still legal heir too, though. You've got to be a legal bloodline, and there are all kinds of...
Yeah, that's really why I was hoping that you could care to elaborate the differences, because they go beyond just getting just a simple old prenup and they go on back, they marry old way. Them those type just about tied into everything.
They have trust.
So can't nobody screw them over. You know what I mean?
I'm saying to you, Kendrick, they have trust. They have very little in their names. It's in a trust. They have different trusts that are set up. They have some trusts that skip a generation. They have property and trusts. They have, these trusts have tax benefits, huge tax benefits. It's ways of passing on your assets to your children without dealing with inheritance taxes. But your children have to be your legal heirs to, well, I guess they don't have to be, but it makes it easier. So
right, in other words, legitimate heirs. I hear what you say.
Yeah, it's smart for a man to have the trust anyway. I mean, there are some inexpensive trusts to look at. It's just really smart.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, but I wasn't talking about the particulars of the legalities of prenup. What I was trying to get to was the fact that if women are going to look for the traditional marriage, or if not the traditional marriage, the marriage plus the family, if they were going to base that on the foundation of the old, I would say 100 years old type of tradition of what romance is, with the man being the leader, taking the lead, making the initiative, making the money, doing all the heavy lifting, then in essence, men aren't really benefiting from that, and neither are the women. Because if the women aren't happy with benefiting from the kind of laws which do benefit them today, and they're not going to benefit from marriage based upon the old ideas of romance, then we have to do something different, something better.
That's an interesting statement. I think people would consider... trying to think what it's analogous to. Sort of a marriage with term limits, let's say. So you get married.
No. No. No.
For 4 years, right?
No.
So you have a four-year marriage, and you have the right to renew it. Like your
the right to review it. That depends. Yeah. I mean, if the terms are favorable for both people, so that neither one of them can strip the other of his or her assets, say, okay, no problem.
Right,
but you were talking about marriage and the nuptials being a legally sanctioned issue, and it is. I don't like the fact that when you get married, you have to get permission from either the state or your religion in order to be recognized as being married and recognized as having a legitimate bond with your wife or your husband. I think
right.
it should be done between two people, and they can write up their own contract to be enforceable by law as to what you're going to do in case of divorce or when the kids are born.
Yeah, they're probably.
So I don't like the yeah.
I know someone who did something like that. I forget the exact name of it. But so, Joe, they actually, when they did have initially this whole idea of marriage, it was up to the two individuals who said, we're now husband and wife, and we're married. And that's the way it went. What happened is that I can't say what percent, but and just walked away and just like the woman, I just literally just abandoned. So that was happening.
Yeah, and that would be the female argument to protecting herself. Also, at one time, women gave dowries for them to be worthy.
Yeah. But so that happened so much that the church stepped in and said that they would play a role in it and legitimize it and the state. Just happening too much. Men just walked away.
Well, they should have, both the men and the women should have, you know, if the women were, well, of course, they didn't have the kind of power that they do today, but they could have in some way provided some kind of security for themselves, as I just finished saying. They had to provide a dowry. The family had to provide a dowry for the woman to be even considered worthy of being married, being marriage material. Do you know any modern-day woman now who has to offer a dowry?
Well, I'm sure it still happens in countries. It still happens. What do you call it? Polyamory?
Maybe.
What is it?
Maybe even sorry. Yeah.
What is it when a woman has more than one husband? Not polygamy, but...
It's polygamy when the like the Mormons do. I think they're still continuing that in Utah.
That wasn't my question, Joe.
What was it? What, the women?
When a woman has more than one husband.
Still polygamous.
No, it's a different name.
Is it? Oh, okay.
Polyandry, that's the word. Polyandry. So it's polyandry when a woman has more than one husband. In the Himalayas, they still practice that today. When your son gets married, the son's side of the family has to give up land to the daughter's side. So that was causing a problem. Because if you have five sons, then you have to give up five different plots of land. So what their solution was, our first son marries a woman, and the other four, they will all be married to the same woman. So that way, we only give away one piece of land.
Oh, for God's sake. Well, they used to give up cattle, too. There's all kinds of bartering when it came to marriage, but marriage isn't working. There are marriages where they're made without the husband and wife actually really knowing each other longer than about a week or two, and those marriages seem to last longer than people think they would, probably because they grow into each other, and who knows? I think in one of your shows, you had a particular section in that show where I think you were describing it, and I think the families got to know each other and believe that their offspring would be compatible with each other. As a result, if you're going to have, you know, those kind of marriages where people don't know each other, except only briefly, or only by families knowing each other, I guess that would make for a better statistic than people think.
Right. Because nowadays, Joe, all folks doing that just hopping in the bed versus getting to know each other and getting to know the families like you just mentioned.
Well, it's the point, and even so, I showed that guy Charles Murray, and he talked about how divorce rates are not high at all in the upper classes, upper middle, and higher. And it's and what the studies show is because they have been better at determining who's compatible with family values. Because they find that is what makes the marriage last, compatibility. Family values is way more important than all these other things that people say, oh, we have a lot in common. So I did a show, Joe, with a much older women with younger guys. So guys like 24 and the woman's like 60 and 50s. And they talked about how they had things in common. They both liked to travel. They liked entertainment and nightlife, and they liked watching sports. Those are things they had in common. But when you get into family values, like your core values and how you manage money and how you manage conflict, where you want to live, how you want to educate your children, how you want to discipline them, how do you manage your health, you know, your mind, mental health, physical health. Those things were way more important in matching up. So when you have families come together, those are the things that they're looking for. They're not looking to see if our kids both like it. They like the same hip-hop artist. Like, that's irrelevant.
Well, I think that's a good thing. I think those kind of family values that you had just delineated, those are good values to look for. Are they compatible in certain areas, such as raising kids, knowing if they are going to send the kids to a private school, public school, how they're going to raise them, under what kind of religion will they choose, who's going to be the major authority in the family when it comes to enforcing rules, discipline. Those are very important.
Integrity, transparency, communication. So the families can figure that out, right? And so just think about it. For years, we've always had parents involved in the union of two people. This is recent that we're now just doing it on our own, and we just don't have the tools to do it. So, you know, a guy could be really smooth and tell a woman anything she wants, but when you have to, when that guy has to talk to her father and her uncles and her grandfather, then he can't be a player with them. Very ineffective. He's got to be a different kind of guy. And they're going to determine
whether... Or he could be lying his ass off to the family in order to make sure that he's going to get the girl that he wants. Unless they're going to investigate his background.
Well, they are going to deal with you in a way that your lying will eventually come to the surface. I mean, if you're a con man and you're really good at it, that's one thing. But most people are not like that.
Well, when I say good, kudos to the families who have that kind of perception. Because you should protect your children, male and female, and you should make sure that if they're going to get married, and again, I don't like the way marriage is nowadays. If you're going to get hooked up, joined, then you should do it for the right reasons, for the right emotional and mental reasons, and not the romantic fantasies which infect women's minds and which make us turn out to be toxic masculine people when we, as toxic masculine men, were the ones that, created a lot of inventions, upgraded the standard of living, in short, protected the planet, as well as having created the wars, but we are the ones that make the world go round. So we deserve to have the right partner, and that partner has to have the right mindset. And the modern-day romantic Harlequin novels and Disney films which infect the minds of women for the last 50, 60, 70 years, it doesn't work, which is,
right,
of course, evidenced by the divorce statistics.
Right. And exactly. And Joe, consider another thing. So a guy could lie to a family, but when they want to sit down with that man's family, they're going to find inconsistencies. So his lies will come to, they'll be easily exposed, because he'll be saying one thing and his family will be presenting something else. So it's easy to uncover that.
Okay, cool.
And they don't just have one meeting. This could happen over the course of months. They are getting to know one another. So it's not like they just 2 weeks before, like they're spending time. They're having dinner together. They're watching how families deal with conflict. They're looking for reputations. You know, are they alcoholics, drug addicts? Are they thieves? You know, is the husband a wife beater? You know, they're looking for all of these kinds of things. How do they manage money? Is he a gambler? They'll know all these things.
I'm assuming that you've gathered that from your experience when you were with, we're down in Brazil, or Belize?
Belize, yeah. Actually, I stayed with a family, and the son wanted to marry the 19-year-old daughter in the family. And there was a guy from another village who wanted to, I was staying with family, a group of Mayans. They're Mopan Mayans. There was a guy who was from a different tribe, Quechi, it's a different language, Quechi tribe. And that Quechi wanted to marry the 18-year-old daughter in the tribe I was in. And his family said, no, don't marry her. And he said, well, I want to. So the tradition is family accepts the woman. The woman goes to live with the groom's family. And she learns about the tradition. She learns from the mother. And, you know, but because they were against that Quechi marrying the Mopan, and it had nothing to do with tribes. They were just against her and her family. He had to come live with them. So his family did not support the marriage. He went against his family's wishes. I don't know how that.
And as a result, oh, okay. I was about to ask you. How quickly did they divorce?
Hey,
or maybe they're still together. Who knows?
You're right. I don't know. I left. I stayed there for a while. If I was a different kind of guy, I could have laid her down. She was very available. She was very available to me. As soon as I said I was staying there, she said she would wash my clothes. There were just some incidents that with her that let me know she was available. But I didn't smart. I was out of control. These guys know how to sleep. So I don't know how long that lasted.
Hey, what's up, Ted? I'm finally out of the spot. I'm in my truck, so if you want to hear me run my mouth a little bit, let me know.
Okay.
Hey, Reggie, is your window down? Reggie, roll your window up.
Man, I got the heat on, man. Hold on, man. Lord, how about now?
That's much better, yeah.
Yeah, that's
better. No problem. Well, I'm in my truck now, so if y'all want to hear me run my mouth, let me know. I'll listen in.
Okay. Someone asked a good question. Why is marriage still seen as a necessary prerequisite for having a family? How is a stable family that's unwed worse than a divorced family? It may have more to do with legal and your children. But there is, they said, there's a book called Micro Trends, and I read it, I don't know, 15 years ago, probably updated. But that was a growing trend, is that couples, more and more couples are living together and having families and never getting married. So when I read the book, they said it was working. These are just couples that didn't believe in the whole legal aspect of marriage. So I would
you know,
think
also,
I just let me say, you I would think the only aspect, hold on, Chris, hold on. The only thing that may be different is from a legal perspective, especially if you have a lot of assets, you want to make sure, especially if you've been a guy who fooled around and made another family somewhere, you don't want someone contesting that does happen. Well, go ahead.
So after a while, after living together for a while, the state is automatically going to deem you common law married anyway. But
not
you don't necessarily have to marry.
Not every state has
that. You don't have to necessarily marry through the state anyway. You can just do a simple ceremony like Africans used to do, just jump over a broom. But you don't have to go to the state to enter into a contractual agreement with the state.
But not every state recognizes common law.
No, not every state, but the vast majority of them do.
Right. So, Leticia, I want to ask you a question. You're still there, Leticia, right?
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay. So, from these conversations that you're having on Clubhouse and in hey, Reggie, is that someone got noise? I think the microphone is brushing against the clothes. Hey, everyone go on mute. It's way too loud. All right. From the conversations you're having, do you think less women are interested, like really being married? Because Joe was asking if they could find someone who's suitable, like makes more money and has all the things you want. Do you think women's interest in marriage is dropping?
Majority of women... Are they interested in marriage dropping?
No, or do you think the interest, women's interest is dropping, or is it staying the same, or is it increased? Like, what's going on from the women's side? Do you think women's interest in marriage is dropping?
It's dropping, but not because they don't wholeheartedly really want to get married. It's dropping because they're not come across suitable men. They're not, they're just not coming across suitable and compatible men.
But you see,
that's why it's dropping.
That's what I was getting at. Like, if they could find the suitable man, do they want marriage?
Correct.
So it isn't dropping then. Women still want marriage then.
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, if you look at it deeply, I mean, if you look at the actual marriage rates are dropping, right? And then you have a conversation with them. And I'm starting to come across too many women who are disillusioned, who are indifferent now. And when I start peeling back the layers of that onion, it's not because they don't feel that they're better off without men. They just can't find a suitable and compatible mate.
So how many of those people did you have conversations?
Can I say something, Ted? Hello, Ted?
Go ahead, Chris, and then Kendrick.
The marriage rate dropping has nothing to do with women. It's men who's always decided who gets the wedding ring and if a wedding is going to take place. Women just decide who they're going to open their legs to and who they date. So the fact that the marriage rates are dropping is because men have deemed these women not worthy of being suitable to get a wedding ring.
No,
Chris,
I understand that. But what I was – I already understand marriage rates are at all time low.
No, I understand what you said, but I'm dispelling the myth that she just told. The
bullshit
she just told.
No. She actually answered my question. Women still want marriage. They still want
it. Who wants to marry a whore? Who wants to marry a whore?
Chris, I understand. Listen, I just wanted to know that's what women still desire. Because if women are just saying, hey, I'm out, I'm not interested, that's a different conversation, but they still actually want to get married. And whether they made bad decisions, that's a different conversation, but I just wanted to get a sense of what she's seeing out there. And women still do desire marriage.
They want to be married during the winter and have hot girl summer.
I understand. Because here's where I want to go with this, but I want, hold on. I want Kendrick to go because then I have another question.
Well, my thing was, Ted, I was trying to see which economic background of these women she having conversation with. Letitia, which group of these women are you mainly having these conversations with? Are they middle class, upper class, are they the six-figure income brackets?
They're women of all different financial circumstances. I'm speaking to women who don't have a lot of money and women who do have a lot of money. And the ones in between.
Cool.
And they're all saying the same thing. They all want the same thing. They still desire marriage and family.
Appreciate it.
Do they understand why men... So on one hand, I do get there are women who make more money now and they're looking for a tiny percentage of men. So, you know, if there are 14 men who make that money and 100 women looking for that, there's all 100 women are not going to get it unless they want to do polygamy. Do these women understand why so many men who would be qualified are not interested? Do women understand that, Letitia?
Prior to having conversations with me, it does seem that and then once I start having a conversation with them, they have a little bit of a disheartened moment, and then the light bulb goes on, and then they realize how they've priced themselves. Mostly they've priced themselves out of the market because for the successful women, the crux comes at them trying to date and mate like men and thinking that their income, their success, holds the same value for men as it do for women, and having to explain to them that your success doesn't necessarily mean nothing unless it's a man who doesn't have anything. And unless you're going to go with a man who doesn't have anything, and then he can put you on a pedestal and, you know, give you the accolades that you desire based on your success and choose you based on your success. Successful men already have it. They don't need you to add to it in that regard. So in having these conversations, there's a mixture of frustration, irritation, regret. No one's told them this. Even the 20-something-year-olds, no one's had that conversation. I've had a conversation with a 20-something-year-old, two-parent household, grew up upper middle class, but her family is more liberal than conservative. And her father encouraged her but they weren't traditional, they were more modern because her mother worked, her father worked. And so she thought, if I worked, I become successful, I invest my money, I build up my portfolio, then I can get a man like my daddy. And when I told her that her expectations were unrealistic, when I told her the probability, because there were other factors, she was very overweight, and she had this like princess mentality of she wanted to keep all her money to herself. And when I told her, she broke down in tears. When I told her the probability of finding a man like her father, that she could have that type of situation in this day and age, she broke down in tears. So I see a lot of that. I see a little But then there's some women who get angry at me. They're the minority. But for the most part, women are starting to accept, realize it, and come to terms with it. That was the best thing about Clubhouse, is that you can reach more women and you can have one-on-one conversations with them in a either co-ed setting or a personal setting, and really, really just get them to understand versus just being on a platform where you're just talking at them. So, yeah, they didn't know before, but they're certainly coming to terms, and it's more and more women who are coming to me who want to understand why they're still single, why their success is not translating into a successful relationship like they thought it would or they were told it would. So I hope that answers your question.
Yep, yep. So that's why you say in the battle of the sexes, that's an example of how women are actually losing.
Correct.
So I think it was the movie White Men Can't Jump. Rosie Perez was in. I'm pretty sure that was the movie. And she said something. She was kind of silly when she said it, but she said, sometimes you win and you lose, and sometimes you lose and you win. Sometimes you win and you win, and sometimes you lose and you lose. That's an example of women feeling like we won, we got the jobs, we're making money, and we won, but you actually lost. You lost the thing that would have been most important to you at the end of your life.
That is correct.
Yep, okay. Hey, hold on, Ms. Twist, I wanted you to see, if you can see this, this is the book, it's literally called Micro Trends by Mark Penn. That's the book I was talking about. This is 2007, so I'm sure they've done an update since 2007. I think I actually saw a newer version, but it's just called Micro Trends by Mark Penn. So there's a battle of the sexes, and women still want to be intimate with a man, to have that companionship, that intimate companionship with a man. Yet they are competing with the very man they want intimate companionship with. And so do they realize that that's a losing battle? Letitia?
Are you asking me? Do they realize?
Yeah, do they realize you're competing and you're in a battle of the sexes with someone that you ultimately want an intimate relationship, intimate companionship? Do they realize competing against the person you want to have as a support structure, an intimate support structure in your life? Do they realize competing with men is a losing battle?
I'm going to probably throw a monkey wrench in here.
Okay.
Because what I'm seeing is they don't see it as competing with men that they desire. They see it as trying to add value or being an asset. And they don't understand that how men see it is not the same. You know what I'm saying? Like how they see it is not how men see it. They don't see it as competition. They don't see it as, they see it as, I'm just trying to be an asset. Here I have my own home, my own car, education, I have my own money.
Really, your answer is no.
And we can grow.
Your answer is no. In other words, they are clueless.
Yes.
So the answer is no. They do not realize that. I don't care how they view it. They're competing for the same jobs with men. They're displacing men in the workforce. And just forget the job, just the whole, I've said this, it's like, there are too many women, if you say, hey, it's raining outside, and she'll believe, well, I'm just challenging you, and it's not raining. And men don't want to, that's a petty conversation to have. And they, a lot of women don't understand that. And that's a losing proposition. And so at the same time, I'll say, and I know a lot of men say, I just want my peace. Any man that's looking for a woman for peace, you're in trouble. That's that you only you are responsible for your peace.
No, no you're not looking for a woman to give you peace. You're just looking for her not to disturb your peace. There's a difference.
I understand. I'm going by see what you just said. Men are saying, I want a woman who gives me peace. They actually I understand that they actually want a woman to not disturb it. But you know, technically, no one can disturb your peace. And I know that's a difficult conversation.
If somebody comes in your house and they start being disruptive, unruly, uncouth, they've disturbed your utopia. They've disturbed the equilibrium that you set forth before they came there. So your peace has been disturbed.
But you personally, your peace is actually that's an inside job. No one can disturb an inside job. Now, if someone is not an asset, if they're working against you, they may not disturb your peace, but they become a liability because they're not adding any value. They're not enriching. They're doing nothing in your life. It's a zero-sum game. But technically, no one can disturb your peace. And I know that's a hard one for people to hear.
Yeah, and I'm sorry. I'm going to disagree with it, but yeah, I mean, I'll accept that as your answer.
No, it's not. When you talk about self mastery, I mean, no one can disturb your peace. Like, absolutely not. That's what makes it like no one is a victim. But we live in a society that has all kinds of strategies to be victims. And now even men are becoming victims. That's become part of the culture. Or maybe that's just U.S. culture is we love the underdog. We love the victim and cheer him on. We want to hear the story of how you overcame such horrible circumstances. That's what we want to hear. We don't want to hear about the guy born with a silver spoon in his mouth.
I mean, people just need normality.
The guy born with the silver spoon in his mouth has a very boring story. The guy who's overcome adversity and come the guy with the silver spoon in his mouth, he's the one with the tall tales tale.
Yeah, but I would say that's more of the victim. So it's the guy with the silver spoon. He has some training and strategy development that you actually would want to learn about. Because what people often do is they end up setting themselves up to be the victim so that they can go overcome the story and have a more exciting story to tell.
Maybe so, but here's the difference. The guy who was born with a silver spoon, he's not going to tell you those stories. But the guy who wasn't born with a silver spoon, who had to earn it, he will.
We don't ask the silver spoon person. We dismiss.
Sure we do.
Okay.
Do you hear the Koch brothers telling you giving any advice, or do they just do underhanded, dirty, and sneaky shit all day long?
No one sits down and talk. How many people want to sit down and do people want to hear about the dirty stuff they do?
Yes, I'm pretty sure people love to hear, but are they going to tell you? No.
Yeah, the information is surely. I did a lot of research on those guys, and they do some slick stuff. It's strategic. It's very strategic. That's why people don't see what's actually happening. So, and now if we get back to the battle of the sexes, and someone may be winning. The general population of men and women are not winning, but someone may be winning. Joe talked about the Rockefellers who were funding feminists. We talk about the Rothschilds funded World War I and II. They funded both sides of the story of the table. So these are so if you look at the stock market, if you look at the stock market in the same way, you can earn money in the stock market, whether it goes up or down. This is strategic thinking. It's understanding the playing field and the levers that are in it that have always having to overcome. So, you know, you overcome. So now what? Now that you've overcome, you understand the strategy to maximize the environment you're in. And that's the guy with the silver spoon is going to understand that, because that's what his parents, see, his parents are going to better prepare him for life. So if you just, the only thing you have to offer your children is to overcome these horrible circumstances, you're going to set them up for that instead of setting them up to be silver spoons for generations.
You're making points that I never said. I didn't say that the guy with the silver spoon didn't. What I said was the guy with the silver spoon isn't going to share his story. He's only going to share those stories with his family because he wants his family to stay on top. And that's why the guy on the bottom gets more, has more of an audience, because the guy on the bottom who rose to the top, he's going to tell his story. It's like he's going to go to a bar and he's going to be that one fisherman in there telling the tall tales of Moby Dick.
Right, right.
How he bagged the white whale. But that guy who has a silver spoon, he's not going there to do that. That's going to be stories that are internalized with his family or whatever.
Well, he's not hanging out.
And, yeah, he's going to pass those on to his, he's going to pass those on to his children, yeah, but you'll never hear him.
That's because
he ain't going to come tell you.
If you're hanging out in a bar, you'll never meet him.
I have a question that I would like to ask the men.
Go ahead.
If that's okay.
Go ahead.
For all the men, when in a relationship, which do you desire most, to have your thoughts respected or your feelings cherished? Your feelings and your emotions cherished.
Yeah, they're multiple choice, talk.
It's one or the other.
Did you say thoughts respected? Hello? I guess you got some blog on.
Leticia, are you still there? I must have kicked her out.
Thoughts respect, that's a very vague statement.
Yeah, it kicked her out. But she can't get back in.
Yeah. Well, she can go through the screen guard.
So I'm going to drop this. Leticia, jump in. I know you got disconnected. Jump into YouTube. I just dropped the link. They're asking you, Leticia, are you talking about? I guess they want you to repeat it. Repeat the question. All right, go ahead. Go ahead, Leticia. You're on mute right now. And Ms. Twist, you're welcome. You're welcome for that. And thanks for giving me the updated title of it, Michael Trend Squared. You're still on mute, Leticia. I unmuted, but it won't. You're unmuted now.
I'm not Leticia.
Oh, I see. Hey, what's going on, man? I thought she jumped in here. I didn't look at the name. I didn't look at there was no name. I see that now. What's up,
man? I just came to listen because she's being weird.
All right.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw. I don't know if you saw. I sent the name of the book.
Mike. Oh, I just, that's what I was just saying. Michael Trend squared. I was just acknowledging you.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's 2018, I think. 2018 it came out.
Let's see.
I'll probably still get the 2007 one. That's the thing with that head in there. And then read the updated one as well.
Okay.
It seems interesting. I don't know.
Yeah, actually, it's a really good book. Hold on, I'm sending Leticia a text. So what do you think of this whole conversation about who's winning the battle of the sexes?
Well, I said it earlier, no one's winning.
Yep.
To even say one side's winning over the other, it's like every time I hear it, it's like whoever's saying it, it's like they're always more biased to one side. Like if it's a woman, okay, obviously they're going to say women are winning. Not always, but generally. And then men, generally going to say men are winning. But it's just like, if you look at it, it's like winning what? Really, it's not really that complicated. Like, you just have to think, okay, well, winning by what metric?
Right.
You know, but it's like, if you look at it based on, like, most guys, and I don't care what guys say, because they keep saying this, and it's some BS, but most guys, at the end of the day, would rather be with a woman than be alone. Now, I personally don't, like, I think there's some of us where we are able to be by ourselves and we're cool with it, but we're the minority. The majority of guys can't do that. That's why they simp out, because they can't take the idea of being by themselves, right? So they'd rather do the little nonsensical things like buying barfool or whatever stupid things to just, you know, get close to some type of female presence. You know, this is why we're seeing growing trends with these types of things where, you know, girls go online and guys never see them, but guys will give them money just for some digital companionship. Like, that's ridiculous, but it is what it is, because that's what's happening. And so the majority of, like, there's some of us where we're not like that, and I think some guys who aren't like that, they extrapolate that onto all men and think, yeah, most guys don't care, but they do, because if they didn't, like I said, the simping would be a lot less than it is. And if the simping was a lot less than it is, women wouldn't be as entitled as they are. But then on the other side of it, you got chicks thinking that they're winning because they're looking at it in terms of money. Even then, most of them are broke, so they're still not winning by that metric, like, so whatever, but they just go off of outdated stats, they or stats that aren't what they think it is. Like, for example, saying, you know, like black women say they're the most educated when they're not. they just get admitted into a lot of things. They're not, it's not like they're actually completing a lot of those courses. And getting, and even then, the courses they're doing is like, you know, educating what. But, you know, again, that's like the way how a lot of these things is measured. It's ridiculous. But ultimately, no one's winning, because if guys, like, and here's the thing, even if you think of winning, time will tell the full story. And I'm pretty sure we'll see over time that no one really won in this engagement, because you're going to come out the other side of it with most people confused. Like, how are we winning when Western civilization is getting weaker? I mean, I don't really understand how that really works. Like, you know, like that's why I said earlier, the only people who are going to be thinking of winning is people who are either benefiting from the device, like people who, in some ways, it's making their life better, or people who don't care. Like, if you've just got an anarchistic mindset and you just want it all to burn down and you don't care about nothing that happens in society, then you'll probably think it's a great thing. You know what I mean? But for the majority of people, it's not a winning situation at all.
Absolutely. Right. I mean, that's why I wanted to have it, like, to say, hey, you know, if you really want to look at the score, no one's winning. Like, the many of the things women are doing are the very things that repel men, and those are the things that may be their metric for believing they won. But, and that's why I made sort of a joke saying sometimes you win and you lose.
I personally don't think they're winning at all. Like, at all. I don't even think them getting jobs is them winning. Because what good is getting a job if at the end of it, you're still going to say, I want a man with more money than me. You're not winning then at all. Like, to be honest, you getting the job was just your first step towards losing. Like, to me, there's no version of reality where women are winning at all. I think some guys are winning, but in their, like, in a sense where they actually genuinely, it's like, you know, where we could look at it and maybe say, that dude's doing all right. Because we I think the only women where maybe you could say that are the ones where, I don't know, man. Because I'm just trying to think of how women might think of it. Like, but I think they're just being disingenuous when they say they're winning. I think it's just them not wanting to admit the fact that they're not happy with the situation. I don't think, because I can't think of any scenarios out here where it's like this. Because the most I'm thinking is, like, maybe when a woman's married to a guy, that lets her do whatever she wants and he's got money. So, like, she manages to get rich then. But the problem is she doesn't tend to respect like that. So even right. in that situation, which should be, like, you would think, well, she's got a guy who's rich and he's doing everything she wants, then she should be happy, right? But then even then, she can still be miserable because she doesn't respect him. So it's like, even that's not a winning scenario. So what really is winning for them? Like, doesn't really seem, and like when you say, you know, a lot of people already know, like, trying to please a woman is just an effort and futility anyway, to be truthfully honest. So I don't think there is any winning for them.
So two Fridays ago, I did a show. I had a woman come on who is a sex worker. She stands 6'1", done the OnlyFans. She's dominatrix. Men pay her to beat her, beat them, or whatever the hell she does. And I asked her, you know, if she were going to choose a man. And she said, well, most likely I'm just going to marry a beta male provider. You know, a guy who makes money, but he follows my lead. And then I asked her the question, will you resent him? She said, ultimately, yes, I will resent him. I will have no respect. Because I know what kind of man he is, and he's spineless. He's not the kind of man that I really want, except he gives me the money I want, sort of what you were describing. He'll give me what I want, but he doesn't ultimately give me what I want as a man. He's just giving me money. And I asked her that question many different ways, and ultimately she always came back with, I won't respect him. She said she dated some guy who was what she called an alpha, and she couldn't control him. And she later found out that she was the side piece for him, and she thought he was controlling and got rid of him. But ultimately, she said that's the only man aside from her father she ever respected. So she respected the man she couldn't control, and it's clear that she will never respect and she will always resent the guy who's the weak beta male. So that's an example of, yes, you're getting money, just like getting a job, but you're not getting what you want ultimately from the relationship, which could have you be quite miserable and losing in the end. I think that's what you're talking about, right?
Yep, pretty much.
So I wanted a woman to come on and say those words. I wanted guys to hear a woman actually say that. Some women will claim that they'll love the guy anyway. Go ahead, Tim.
They done shot themselves in the foot by coming out of midnight calls. You got to look at it this way. The so-called beta male is going to be non-existent here in the next couple of years, Ted. Then you're going to be left with a whole bunch of aggressive men. So when they say they want that masculine dude, all men gonna naturally become revert back to their masculine traits here in a minute, and they not looking at it like that.
Yeah.
So you can't resist the thing that you can't control.
Hey, you can't.
Ain't no resentment, man.
You can't out alpha the government.
Yeah, but the government can't. The government ain't gonna enslave my soul. My soul ain't for sale, Rich.
Well, that, oh, okay. Well,
that's what it gained, it profit you to gain the whole world and lose your damn soul? It don't profit you nothing. Well, what would a man give for his soul?
That's fine. See, I mean, I'm just saying.
We got to ask, so
okay, listen. ain't nobody can out-alpha the government. As long as they have the government backing them and whatever, you can't out. I mean, you know, there's plenty of women. You know what? These broads is unhappy. You know why? Because just everything what Ted just got to stand for. They got with the guy for, they get with the beta male for protection or whatever, but that's he's really not the one they want. But so.
Not protection.
Protection. Okay. Well, yeah, no, wait a minute. Ted, yeah, protection. Let me tell you something. When a woman talking about she's looking for protection, she ain't talking about physical protection. She's talking about financial protection, Ted. That's what they're saying. It's not a physical thing. And when they say protection, it's a financial thing. That's a fact.
Okay. What about when they deal with the strong, the big strong dude who has no money?
Uh-huh. Okay, they're fine. They'll deal with him for a while, but I tell you what. A broke broad with an empty stomach with the utilities off and a bunch of work, her pussy don't get wet no longer, okay? So no, that's fine for
the women who have money get with dudes like that.
Oh, okay. Well, he's just going to be a kept dude. Hold on, Ted. He's just going to be a kept dude until she gets tired of it and ready to replace him. She's still going to be unfulfilled. Because what it is the guys that they really want, I just use your favorite word, they don't qualify for. Because even if they have money, you just said it about 30, 40 minutes ago, that a man with money, he ain't concerned about a woman with money. He's looking for something else. So basically they caught in the middle because, you know, she has this position, this status, whether she really deserves it or not, because more or less, if she wasn't there, some man would be working there, and he would be providing for someone like her. But she's there in the way. So now she's in his place, but she don't want to be the provider protector. She can't, you know. So that's a problem. Because if a man was there, if he making $500,000 a year, he tells his wife, "Hey, I got to stay your ass at home." She making $500,000 a year. She's looking for somebody who makes that or more or double, just so when she hits the fan, she can come up at the end. So basically, I mean, they really caught in the middle. Am I correct? Yes or no? Yes or no? Very simple. Yes or no?
Yeah, that's what Letitia was saying. Women have outpriced themselves.
Oh, okay, well, okay, that was a yes. Okay, well, I know about what Letitia. But you answer my question. The answer is basically yes. So they're gonna be some lonely, miserable ass broads. They're gonna be unfulfilled, and any guy that they get with, it's gonna be somebody that they feel they are above, and they're gonna resent his ass. So they're gonna be unhappy. And like I said, the guys that they want, they don't qualify for.
Men are losing also because men don't know how to stop
them. I didn't say somebody was losing or winning. I just made a statement. I didn't say men was losing or women was losing. I told you that those type of women, okay, are status is. Hey, you got women who making $30,000. They got it going on. They feel good about themselves. Then you got these women making six figures, or in the new dynamic of the workforce. But they are in a man's place. They're making the money, but they don't want to take. They don't want their money to go to the household. If they got a man there, if they don't have a man there. They don't have to pay bills. And they got to worry about a bunch of other stuff going on. Like I said, I told y'all this story before. I know a woman who was making good money, but her ass is lonely. Of course, she's a divorcee with, and she had kids by two different men. But you know, she still was a professional woman. But she was telling her, "I'm tired of paying these bills. I'm tired of worrying about this double time. I want somebody to take this off me." So you know, like I said, it's a marathon. It's not a sprint. They got out there. The system gave them men's positions because what they doing, again, a man was doing, and he would be sitting there so he can build up his legacy, take care of family. They don't want to do it. So now they ask to stop. The Jews or the people at the top, whoever set this up, are winning, and everybody else is eventually going to take some kind of loss. And
right.
then and your man said something interesting. Thing. Said something earlier that was very interesting. What did he say? Is this the guy from over the pond?
Yes.
He said something. It came to mind, but he was spot on. It evades me right now, but he was spot on. If it comes back to me, I might be able to mention it. But they're not going to be no winners or losers. The women, so you know what? This still goes down to Mother Nature and biology. Somebody got out of their lane. Somebody allowed themselves to be manipulated and played or whatever. And, you know, this is the repercussions of it. You're going to have a downfall. You're going to have a struggling economy. You're going to have unhappy people. Oh, I know what he said. Thank you. It's about certain type of men like myself and you, Ted, and Chris. We don't have a problem living alone. You know, I really, you know, I don't know, you know, I don't know if that's, you know, I've met women who had a problem with dealing with me because I didn't have a problem being by myself or cooking or cleaning. I really didn't, you know, I didn't know until somebody told me, but obviously that's not the majority of men. That's what the guy was saying, right? He said the majority of men do not want to be by themselves. That's what the guy said. What's his name again from Old Upon?
Miss Twist.
What's his name?
Miss Twist said that.
So I never really thought about it, but maybe there's some validity there, you know. Because I know some guys, you know, they get, you know, a guy get divorced or break up from shit, you know, he's got to be connected to, you know, to a woman or have a woman in his life. So I don't really know if that's the majority. Do you feel like the majority of men's head? Chris? A country boy, Joe, do y'all all feel like that's the majority of men? Yes or no?
No, Rich, if this was a Sodom and Gomorrah situation that they leave.
Okay, listen, bro. Country boy, is that the majority of men, yes or no?
The majority of men.
Does the majority, they have to be attached to a female.
I would say no, but sexual-wise,
you will
yes.
say Well, okay, Chris.
The man gone. You know what I mean,
well,
Rich. You know what I mean.
Hey.
He gonna always get him some. You know what I'm saying.
Still is. That means she can come over. She can play. She can play, but she can't stay.
Most men are not skilled like that. Most men are not.
Okay, so that's what I'm trying to say, country boy. They want to be in a committed relationship, or they want some connection to someone. They want some woman in their life. That's what they want. You know, if they don't have that significant other or whatever, you know, they have a problem. They want to love something, or they want to provide for a woman, or, you know, have that type of connection with the opposite sex.
Let me add one line that you haven't said. They're afraid to be alone.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. See how you answer that? You don't have a problem being by yourself, country boy, correct?
Yeah. And I'm telling you that wholeheartedly, because for 20-some years, man, I've been by myself anyway, so
okay.
it ain't no big deal.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
I can't live in no fantasy.
He's asking a question. His question was, are most men afraid to be alone? And I would say yes.
Okay. Chris, you feel that same way? Chris, you feel that same way?
He might have got kicked out.
Okay. Joe over there? Joe got kicked out too? Joey?
Yeah, he got kicked out. I don't know why it does that, but anyway.
Okay, so Ted, Let
me just say this, Reggie. There are men who are afraid to be alone. But the crazy thing, and I'm asserting, women have a more difficult time being alone than men do. So this is ultimately why no one is winning out of the majority.
Okay, you know what, Ted? I don't have any documentation to back up what you just said, but I would say my opinion, my feeling is, no woman wants to be alone. I don't care what they say, you know. That's why they got these wherever I go, they got all these damn cats and dogs and all these pets and shit going on. Just getting on my damn nerve. But I would think that they would you have a large majority of men who, you know, don't want to be, you know, have to be connected to a female. And I think that big thing with me and myself, because women don't find validation so much